Blog Talk Radio.
Why isn't the show going live? It's on. What's going on? I got bills. I don't know why this is not going on. It was set to go on. No. My job is to make sure it goes up. Maybe a gas or something, I'll put it over or something. It should be on.
Blog Talk Radio.
Friday, 3:05 p.m., and this is The Last Word with Michael Lawson, Thomas Thornberry. Old Tony got a major, major send-off with every star in the world there at, I believe, Corb told me it was St. John's up in Harlem.
Yeah,
he had a real
End of The Sopranos.
Valentine's Day Massacre.
Funeral.
Cause for following cause.
Yeah, except for that, you know, Alec Baldwin always has to try to get some attention, you know.
No, what was that? About that? What was that? What,
I
was
don't
that?
Even
what happened?
Care. He was something. He's complaining about
the paparazzi
or
the
reporters or something, but he's just basically trying to get attention.
Well, what they were saying that Cole told me that he was tweeting, what did he do thing? Tweeting his ex-wife, and they were tweeting back and forth. They captured the tweets or something.
Yeah.
You know,
who cares?
Well,
shut up.
Yeah. Okay, Tony. Played that once for you.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That was a major event. That show ran for
good.
Years and years.
Went out good with the with that 10-inch pawns. And that suit, that he had was like 5 billion calories in it. Was all I don't know what it was. Kind of soup it was.
And he was there to get an award. I mean, he was on top of the world.
Top of the world. So
what a busy week, Mike.
Oh man, I was up at 5 o'clock this morning. 5 o'clock this morning, I was falling asleep. I was so tired, my legs started bothering me again. I said, "Oh no, I can't do it. Take my medication." I'm telling you, I'm supposed to get my third shot in the series of these lumbar epidurals on July 2nd. So I'm hoping that closes the book, although it closed the book on me going away. Although we are going away, going to Charleston the weekend. So next
just
week,
not as far away there, Mike.
Yeah. Next week
you were going to go away on the big international
extravaganza
vacation, but you decided to take it a little bit easier.
Just in case.
You know what? Last thing you need is to be hiking up the side of a pyramid and blow out a disc in your lumbar region.
God,
right?
Please give me a break. So so we'll just be around. But next week will be a
update.
One of the biggie repeats.
Hey, there ain't no
this week, we got major people on this show this week. Now, I want to tell you, we're going to have the general counsel and managing director for the Advancement Project, the Reverend Edward Hales, and we're going to have the chairman of the North Carolina Democratic Party, Randy Vola, and the chair of the 8th Congressional District of North Carolina, Grace Leem Galloway, our own doctor in the house, and Robert Bradford, chair of Mecklenburg County Democratic Party. And we're also going to have Luis Rodriguez, who was one of the people that started Occupy Charlotte.
That's right.
And he's a writer and author, and he works for Action North Carolina. He's working for Action North Carolina right now. And we're going to give a perspective on a few things.
Important movements, man. How that Occupy was an important movement going on.
It
shook up the world a little bit.
It did. And we're going to talk about the horrendous decision and see, here's the thing that makes me so mad. That this Chief Justice, John Roberts, who was working in the Reagan administration and whose sole job was in the Reagan administration to get rid of the Voting Rights Act.
Yes.
That was his sole job.
Well, job well done. He's now mission accomplished.
Reagan's dead now, but he got it done.
I need to say it took a little bit longer, but they got it done. You know,
I mean,
he should basically be on the aircraft carrier with the big banner behind him. Mission
that's right.
Accomplished.
Yeah, mission accomplished. So he got that done, and but the Supreme Court.
Well, here's the thing, though. They did what they could to hobble it, but they didn't get rid of it.
No,
you can't touch it because it's actually valid.
Right. Yeah,
what they're doing is playing this game now where they're saying, it's a good thing, but you need to rethink the map or the way you make the map.
The formula. But see, it doesn't matter what has been done, in my estimation, is that, and we'll go over this again with the our guest, but you can run, but you can't hide. Because even though right out of the back, the ink wasn't dry on the paper coming down from the Supreme Court, Texas ran amok and started passing all these restrictive. One place they have 86 precincts, I can't remember what county it is. They cut it down to 12. So now people who could had to drive maybe 2 or 3 miles to get to their precinct or 5 miles now had to drive 55 miles. And not only that, they're going to have to drive back because you won't be able to same day vote and register.
Yeah, because now they've got the thing where you they're also, besides cutting your locations, they're cutting the time. You don't get the weekend voting. You don't get the multiple chances. You don't have the
late. You're going to get one day. There ain't going to be no, what do you call, early vote. Mm-hmm. There's only going to be one vote. So you'll vote that day or you don't vote at all.
Now, I think you're more accurate.
And they say, oh,
I think
we always had it like that.
Yeah, it'll be one vote. It'll be one dude with the
hoodie. One vote, right.
Go ahead. Didn't your men depress the Tea Party button?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So what else we got in news?
We got tons of news. This week was unbelievable. So we won't even get into all the other news because it's hard to even get into. It's too much stuff going on. But like you said, this is a big week legally across the board. So we've got everything going on. You know, we've got national and local state news. All on these legal fronts going. We'll mention here just real quick because we're not going to go through it all this week. But you still got this whole Snowden thing flowing around.
No.
Where's Waldo, Snowden,
The more and more, and you hear the president said, he says, am I going to spend some time sending some jets over there? He said, just for a junior hacker?
Yeah.
Realistically, Snowden didn't know anything.
My favorite summation of the whole thing.
Yeah.
They had this meme floating around on Facebook the other day. Had a picture of, you remember the pictures of Putin on his horse riding around like when he was being a macho man, cowboy guy? Okay. They had the pictures of Putin on his horse with Snowden behind him, holding around his waist, riding together across the banks of the river. And I thought that was hysterical.
Oh, God.
Because now here's the thing. The whole Snowden thing, this guy is just obviously he's out, for publicity. He's doing everything else and all that. You know, me being the nefarious conspirator that I am, I think his whole deal is not just simply a, this is an easy way for me to make a name and get bucks deal, but I think it's a snow job.
Snow job?
Yeah.
Is that
you like that? I think it is, though, because of the whole thing was too pat. You know, there was a lot going on. If you remember, you always got to watch, what the Republicans are doing and what's happening. And we've had several really high-profile, very odd and damaging leaks during this Obama administration.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Isn't that weird, right? And one of them we'll talk about, too, is another major deal of this thing is that for the first time ever, they've now pointed the finger at one of our own generals. You know, we got this four-star general, James Cartwright, who you rightly call the
Hoss.
Yeah, for those of you that remember the Great Westerns, that would be a name well familiar. But anyway, you got this guy who is a high level. He was the Marine general who was the second highest ranking commander at the time. He was
second highest of the Joint Chiefs.
Yeah, and he was in charge of Cyber Command. He suddenly come out under the gun of being a leaker. He's the guy who leaked all of the Iranian stuff when he took out the Iranian centrifuges, with the Stuxnets. People may not remember that right now, but it was a big deal a year or so ago. We did a preemptive strike, if you will, on the Iranian nuclear.
And how come Obama didn't get any credit for that?
Well, that's one of the things. Now, listen, right when he's doing things like that, during elections and everything else, suddenly why it occurred leaked that we did the cyber wars. First time we've ever been caught doing cyber war, right? It's a big, big deal. Now, during this one with Snowden, we were in the middle of a really, really big
show. A really, really, really big show.
We were a really big show with China. If you remember, we were having a showdown over cyber war, and we had just declared cyber war on them because they were hacking into all of our systems.
Mm-hmm.
And we had just declared that they had stolen a whole bunch of our plans, a bunch of our equipment, high-tech stuff, our most sensitive stuff, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And then, out of nowhere, here comes the little Snowden deal. Now, I don't like coincidences, but it sure changed the focus suddenly. And it went back to, instead of being an international thing on the other foot, it's all back on the Obama administration. You know, well, somehow all his people were letting out our secrets and all his people. You know, he's got an administration leaking like a sieve. You know, he's got this.
Oh, yeah. But it's not like when Valley Plains was leaking and people were actually murdered over there in Europe, agents.
Yeah, no, but see, that's just when.
Oh, that didn't count.
Probably some total dick probably turned her in. But anyway.
Okay.
So you're just off the chainy today. Off the chainy.
But this
does bother me that there's this endless series of kind of faux leaks and stuff going on, you know, and it is troublesome. So my whole thing with the Snowden deal is it doesn't smell right, and there's got to be something else going on, because what he's leaking isn't at all important.
He's leaking the... We already know it.
Well, no, yeah. It's like I want to tell you, America, there's a USA Patriot Act.
Right.
Really?
If you didn't know that you were being... I mean, how long has it been in the published arena that they were building this place in Utah or Colorado?
All of it is...
Don't you watch the person of interest?
Right. I mean, basically, when you already have... The best TV shows running for years past have been covering it. You know, it's already old news, I'm just saying. So there is this whole kind of gotcha, gimmick thing going on that I can't... I'm not quite following, but it's something isn't right with the Snowden deal, and it isn't just Snowden getting attention. And I think it is kind of interesting that he camped himself in China when he released, you know, his identity. And then he flies to Moscow to hang out with Putin, who, you know, if we all remember correctly, is the soulmate of George W. Bush. I mean, they saw each other's soul and they're, you know, looking at each other. So, it is just kind of weird, this whole shenanigan thing. And then, you know, Obama can't touch him. He's been coddled by all of our friends. So it makes you wonder. Now, to get to that other side I was going to mention, coming back over this direction, Obama has made a name for himself for being the number one of all time.
That's right.
Who is that? Prosecutor, chaser down of, catcher, whatever you want to call it, of spy. I mean, anybody who leaks or spies in his administration, they're going down, and they're going down hard. And they said he's had five times more prosecutions than the entire history of presidents in our illustrious history here. So, given all that, he is going after countries trying to get them to not allow Snowden in. And one of the big ones that he's going after several major companies, but recently Ecuador was going to let him in. And he was actually supposed to fly from Moscow to Ecuador and didn't make that flight because we said we were going to punish Ecuador.
Down the plane.
If they did that.
Oh.
No, you'll probably shoot down the plane. But they were going to punish Ecuador with trading sanctions. Which
what did he get from Ecuador?
Bananas or something. I don't know.
Oh,
probably, it's probably actually, if you look
at it. I like bananas now.
It's probably actually, to be blunt, you know, where we ship our Colombian cocaine in from. But anyway.
Oh.
Given all that.
Trading cocaine.
He said we were going to do this. So the president of Ecuador, this guy Correa, he just canceled all the benefits. So he's not going to participate in the Andean Trade Promotion and Drugs Eradication Act that we assigned with him.
So he's not going to stop drugging.
So he's canceling all of that because he said it's not even worth it because he said we're intimidating him and threatening his nation.
Well,
his sovereign nation.
You remember, listen to what Jeff Dunn, chair of the House Homeland Security Oversight Act, said about the... we got the other guy in there. We don't want to. We'll hear Rick Wise, too. Let's hear Rick Wise.
While you guys are rounding up and deporting the illegal immigrants, any chance The House may pursue Barack Obama's phony identification papers.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know,
that's the original scandal, Congressman. That's the original scandal.
Him in November. People should have voted against him in November, and I'm afraid that wouldn't get to the Supreme Court where it ought to get.
But if we know that they're lying about all these other things, why not go back and say, well, maybe the first scandal was a lie too?
There you go. I'm all with you. So let's go back and revisit some of these things, because Americans have questions about not only the IRS scandal, but also about the president's validity.
All right. Hey, I appreciate you being on the program today. My guest, South Carolina Congressman and Chairman of the House Homeland Security Oversight Committee.
That was the wrong Duncan I wanted to talk about. But we need to hear that anyway.
We need to hear stupid. It just keeps
you stupid is what stupid does. But we have this guy, Snowden, has done absolutely
Rick Wilde's
nothing that
really.
It's espionage.
Yeah.
It's espionage, and that's why
he's not being
tried for treason. We were talking about that.
Yeah, he's confirmed the facts.
Right. He's done.
That's not really do anything wrong, but he has confirmed the facts that of what exists. I mean, we do have this elaborate spying network, and we do monitor things. And I think the only thing that was new, if you will, which is retarded but obvious to everyone, is that he confirmed that it was more extensive than anybody could ever possibly have known, and that we were spying on, all the American calls and all the international calls. Oh, my God, everybody's email's been read, This isn't an actual revelatory moment. We've known about this for years. That was part of the anger and horror at the Bush administration.
Right.
It was caught doing this. And why they rushed, if people forget these things, they rushed the USA Patriot Act through. If you remember that, like, one day talk about it, the next day vote.
Right.
Ramrodded that thing through. And one of the most damning provisions of it was, if you remember at the time, the ACLU and everybody else was going to sue all the phone companies because it then found out that they were all spying on them.
Right, right.
And to prevent that, they put in a provision retroactively protecting them from any lawsuit from a citizen.
Exactly.
Remember that?
Yep.
So, again, it was known then. This has been on the books. It's already been reauthorized. But there's no shocking Snowden revelation anywhere. I mean, it's just not.
I mean, this is such a it's just such a farce.
But
and it's keeping everything. It's a distraction from keeping what the Supreme Court has done this week.
Right.
I mean, it's a
distraction. These things are distractions, but, I mean, there's a thousand things going on. I mean, I thought it was kind of cool, for instance, to give, another country a kudos. This last week, the Chinese had their astronauts up in space at the space lab.
Is that right?
And they did live broadcasts and different experiments, had kids calling in, did experiments on that, and then they successfully came back down to the Earth. But, again, it kind of reminds me, it makes you just get a little bit angry. It's like, why aren't we investing in our space program? Why aren't we doing these things? Because they also announced that they were going to launch, I think later this year, their first moon probe. It's going to go up and start taking soil samples on it. No, Chinese.
Okay.
So, I mean, again, there's all this going on.
We have our...
Yeah, we're just going on to Mars.
Yeah, we don't know about that CIA black program that has poured in $50 billion into it.
And that's why I call it the dark side of the moon?
That's right. And we have a station up there. We're going great. We're growing,
I think our station has that big black stone monolith in it.
Yes, the monolith. Right.
That goes move on out to Jupiter.
Right,
that's,
right.
That one.
That's
with the name going, dum,
dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum.
That's the one I'm talking about.
But speaking of news that everybody's missing, we've got to just mention all these things. In the middle of Snowden Gates and the Supreme Court, which we're going to cover in late, by the way, but people, if you're wondering, why aren't you talking about the news of the Supreme Court? That's all we're going to talk about today.
Oh, yeah.
But in all that, the bulldozer effect was it ran slap over
Beautiful
Obama's major climate speech he gave this week. which lasted about 30 minutes, and everybody was going, wow, really? And then they, like, threw civil rights out the door, and then they let the gays in, everybody, what happened, you know, and nobody remembers climate. Did he say something? I don't know. But he gave a major speech, you know, said he's going to regulate carbon, do all this type of stuff nobody is paying attention to. Other thing is,
but the North Carolina Assembly, because they said they're now going to charge taxes, double taxes on anybody that has an electric car.
Yep.
I mean, you know, unconstitutional. Isn't that taxation right where
they're going? Yeah, they're going to go and punish people now because you got efficiency. You know.
Right.
But that's,
we want pollution and we want gasoline deserts.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, we're going to frack your house into a pit. Anyway. But so that was going on. These are major deals are happening. So we got climate change. The Affordable Care Act is still being enacted. People don't realize it. Step by step, it's coming in. Now, guess what? Insurers officially can't go back and throw you off the books for something that you've got a pre-existing condition for.
That's right.
You know?
Even when you join them, they can't say no.
Unfortunately, for the Republicans, they're starting to get a little bit of heat over this, but people don't realize the sequester is still kicking in. So this week, for instance, it's a final countdown to Monday morning. They're fixing to nail students across the board. They're going to get a
double
increase in their loan rates. So this is a tragedy. I mean, it's an absolute, and it's completely stoppable because, you know, when they want to go home on break, they last minute changed the airfares and all that problem, didn't they? They went and put like guards at every 5 feet, so they didn't have to wait in line.
Right.
But they could fix this too. But anyway, so all this stuff's in the background. We also have, which you were even laughing about, you didn't even get to see it live. But
oh yeah,
Mayor Anthony Fox was confirmed as a U.S. Transportation Secretary.
Can you imagine?
But
that?
Listen to this, people. This is this guy now. He's our mayor. Happens to be right here in town, but. Our Charlotte mayor, such a good guy. He's so bright, and he's got so much going for him that in an unbelievable moment, our U.S. Senate voted unanimously for this guy. It's 100-0 vote, and nobody even abstained. I mean, that's unheard of completely. There's not even one guy that didn't just say, you know, well, I got to go back. You know. So that is a major milestone, but they said it was completely uncontentious sail-through nomination.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
He was only nominated just a month ago, and he's already confirmed that.
And
so,
I wonder if he's one of the youngest transportation
secretaries. Oh, he probably should be.
22.
He's a young guy. So.
But I don't understand. So they were so busy with everything else, they had their assistants go out and make the vote? I mean, they missed that?
How the hell did
they miss that?
Well, what's weird about this is that the Republicans can barely work. They barely show up at the Capitol.
Yeah, but
that's so
the
I don't
Senate
understand.
Now. The Senate is not like the House. The House, has.
They show up like 2 or 3 days a week.
75-80% of morons. But the Senate is supposed to be the big boys club.
Mm-hmm.
Listen.
Another example of the big boys club. In between the cracks where nobody noticed, they passed comprehensive immigration reform in the Senate.
Oh.
Now, that one was a lot harder to fight.
And you
know, lost about 37 senators, but they passed it.
And it was only 32.
Now it's going over to the House,
Listen,
which will be
But Reed made them all sit down at their seats at the table.
Like
they weren't allowed to talk about it like it was classroom, the fifth grade. Okay, everybody, children,
sit down.
This is an important vote we're taking.
Yes.
I want you to
get
make sure you have everything in front of you. Got
your
paper and pencil and mm-hmm. press the button green for yes
mm-hmm.
and press the other button no. Okay, now when everybody gets finished that, we can get up and go to playtime.
It reminds you of that scene from Lincoln where they're trying to get the vote. Remember
oh, yeah.
They got everybody in there, and they're like hammering on them and making them sit down and vote, and then they had to make them sit and do it vocally.
Right.
And they're getting embarrassed, and they're looking at the people in the audience, and they're going, which way should I vote? Yes.
Now, but how did you – I just didn't understand that there was nothing even – there wasn't anything major on any of the news channels that I saw. I don't watch the local news.
This is a good example of this. There was a joke going around the other day that said, isn't it sad about America that there's more attention on Paula Deen you know, racism, than the actual destruction of the Voting Rights Act by the Supreme Court. So something that's really going to affect the country versus this BS, you know, faux celebrity crap that they got going on. But that's exactly this distraction news that we have these days. There's no real substance. So that's all you hear now is, you know, politics,
exactly.
And whatever, and all this other stuff. Just standing through.
No, Paula Deen, come on, give me a freaking break. Yeah. I mean, I
agreed the other day. Reverend, what's his name?
He said, "Who are you?"
Gosh.
No, if she did
Jesse
that
Jackson.
Time.
Did you see Jesse Jackson's statement on it?
No.
He released a statement, and he said, if you're, you know, gleefully participating in the destruction of Paula Deen and all that kind of, you missed the point. She's nothing. She's irrelevant.
Absolutely
she's
irrelevant.
A symptom of the broken system.
That's right.
The cause behind it. And he said, to make her a scapegoat does nothing and doesn't accomplish anything. And he said, what we should actually do is publicly pressurize, you know, the situation so that she changes and does and becomes a representative for us. Because he said, we've done it before for other people. And he mentioned, you know, governors and Alabama and everything.
Well, I don't know if you can change
around.
That.
No, but he
that
just said
so
you can redeem someone rather than destroy. Because he said to destroy her is pointless. It's just literally just like, you know, tearing down a poster on a wall.
Well,
it doesn't have any effect.
She ain't going to be destroyed. She's got millions and millions and millions of that.
Right. But it's a good
and
it's
she's always
going to
have
a
restaurant.
Because it's the system. This, you know, this old South and, you know, like we fight the Boys Club and everything else down here. It's not her. It's just a call.
But the thing is that, and the problem is, you're not going to change Paul Deen. She's going to be the way she is for the rest of her life. The problem is she just needs to know that you can't go out in public and do this. And if you don't know that, then you shouldn't be out in public. It's as simple as that. Paul Deen, you know.
Look, she's an idiot.
Yes,
money by cooking
you can't change
sticks
stupid.
Of butter
stupid.
On TV.
Yeah,
you know, so
right.
But again, here, look, we just wasted 5 minutes talking about her, and it's pointless.
Right.
Make it
that's
okay.
The point.
So, but anyway, so we've got all this stuff going on. We got, you know.
But
really
I like Wendy Davis.
Well, that's what I was getting.
I like Wendy Davis.
Because let me say this first before we get into Davis, because she's my hero of the week. Okay?
Right.
I love Wendy. But let me get to this first. Other sad Texas news.
This
week was a hallmark.
Hallmark.
Texas killed their 500th inmate on death row, making it the champion death state.
All time.
Woo! Go Texas. Killed them all dead. Now, this was, again, something that's completely obliterated. Nobody even noticed. It just was happening. But, again, it points out, you know, there's severe problems, and there's no reason these days, I don't think, to be killing, you know, 500 people for anything. They need
and
to
I wonder how many
and,
were not guilty.
You got to
go. Well, never know. You know, it's... you know, those innocence projects and stuff they got now with the DNA test and all that, they could alleviate so much of this. And you know how much it costs, by the way, to kill people? It's ridiculous.
More, oh, God.
You know, why don't you try funding some of those schools and opening back up some of those polling places that you're trying to close down in Texas rather than killing them. But anyway, that's beside the point. Let's get on to Wendy. Here's some good side of Texas news right here. So you want to talk about Senator Wendy Davis?
You mean there's a good side to Texas?
Yeah, I think she's there.
There's a good side to Texas. Boy, oh boy. I just don't know. But
so
the good side of Texas.
Here's the deal.
That must be shooting.
Texas, like anywhere else, there's a Republican in control of their Congress. The state Congress is voting to gasp. I couldn't believe it was happening. They're voting to restrict women's rights, women's access to health, women's access to abortion, you know, anything to do with, you know, sex ed or any of this other stuff. They were a horribly restrictive, damaging budget that they were proposing that would make it the most restrictive in the entire country. And it would close about 80% of all of the clinics. And I think leave something like there was only 3 going to be left or something for the entire state. I mean, it's some ridiculous.
Yeah, 5.
So you got this is what's going through.
We're
because Governor I can't even remember my own three fingers on my hand. Had called a special session back because, remember, this Republican bill, so they're all on vacation. You know, they're all just out.
They've been on vacation.
Rubbing oil from the oil rig on their skin so they can get tan, you know, laying out in the desert. But they're on vacation. He calls them in for a special session. They have this one day they can ram it through. And by their law, they've got till midnight to do this special legislation.
But you said something about Perry not being able to count. I got something on him.
Yeah, there's a reason I said that.
And I will tell you, it's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Five. Okay. So commerce, education, and EPA.
Seriously? Is EPA the one you're talking about?
Or? No, sir. We're talking about agencies of government. EPA needs to be rebuilt.
But you can't.
The third agency of government, I would do away with the education,
the air conditioning in the house.
Commerce. The third one I
can't. Oops, he says. This is a man who is still pushing in the GOP teabaggers party to run again for president of the United States.
Yep.
This man who sits in the governor's mansion in Texas that has no power.
Mm.
He has no power.
Like
he's just a mute. The only thing he can do in Texas is sign the death penalty bill.
Yeah, like 500 times.
500 times, because that's the only thing he knows how to write is his name.
Yeah, but here's the deal. These guys, I mean, and I think it's very telling that the first thing he's going to get rid of is education, and he can't remember the third. I mean, that's pretty much self-evident right there. And I think it's hysterical. Well, two points that I think are hysterical. One, Republicans who are jobs, jobs, jobs. All we care about is greed, money, and corporations. Jobs, jobs,
exactly.
Jobs. That's all they say every other breath, right?
But they never got to the job.
Yeah. This is the guy who's number one act. The second I get to Washington is to kill the Commerce Department. Are you, what? I'm sorry. I didn't quite follow. You know, what do you want? I guess these are the same, you know, people who are proudly proclaiming the end of they're not going to ever raise taxes. They're not going to pay for anything. And they're going to wonder why. The government goes broke and collapses.
Here's the other thing. This
should be
known for. Well, the only thing to know for is no and avoid.
Does Texas continue with abstinence education programs when they don't seem to be working? In fact, I think we have the third highest teen pregnancy rate in the country.
No, this is
abstinence. But we are the third highest teen pregnancy. We have the third highest teen pregnancy rate among all states in the country.
The question,
the point is,
there's regular inside.
The fact of the matter is, I'm suggesting it works. I'm just going to tell you from my own personal life. Abstinence works.
Now,
that's pretty hysterical.
And when he asked that question, I saw the TV replay of it. He did the old George Bush thing.
Yeah.
Because he has no answer.
No, this is again. People are in the Republican Party. There's no facts. There's just opinion. And it's like saying, well, I feel that it's the best thing ever.
I feel
that it works. But no, the statistics show the opposite. I mean, the facts show the opposite. That's just like saying, well, I don't think that carbon emissions affect global warming. No, they do. You know, but that's the way they operate. They always operate. And this is where it gets into that, you know, sort of the math realm of faith. They operate simply by opinion and faith in things rather than any factual basis at all.
And State Senator Wendy Davis.
Well, so here's the point. So Wendy Davis is the lady who, she's a Democratic senator, which is a rare breed, by the way, in Texas. But they, as I said, the governor, who can't count to three, called a special session to ramrod this very restrictive anti-abortion, anti-choice, anti-women's health bill through. And she said no. So the only thing that she could do is filibuster, because the Democrats don't have power to do anything else or stop it or anything, but they could still filibuster. Now, the catch to this is Texas, yet again, they have the most restrictive filibuster in the United States. So this filibuster is not just your usual filibuster like they have here in Washington. They can just, like, hang out and have their staff do it and, you know, read a phone book and a napkin and drink a Coke and then go take a 30-minute break and come back and continue the filibuster. Or, my favorite yet, they can just say they're going to do a filibuster and go home. And they can actually leave and put in a virtual filibuster, which is just BS to me. At least you should talk. So this is the Texas thing. To give them some credit, they make you show up and talk and all that. But to make it
almost
as
like
hard as
Mr.
possible,
Smith goes to Washington.
Well, to make it as hard as possible, they put all these restrictions on her. So she has to do this like 12 hours. She has to stand there. There can be no chair.
No leaning.
No leaning. She can't touch the podium. She can't touch anything, a desk, anything. And she has to stay on topic. She can't talk about anything else. She can't read any other source. She has to talk about the bill or the subject under discussion. And she has to do it continuously. There can be no break. She can't get water. She can't go to the bathroom. She can't get a bite. Nothing. There's no 5-minute break.
Well, one of the amazing things is that, I mean, if people come follow me and ask me, this is so amazing. Have you ever heard of a woman that didn't go to a bathroom in 12 hours?
Yeah.
I said, oh, I didn't think about it, but you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, forget it.
You know, but anyway, so here's the thing, and this is why it's like my, I'm telling my hero of the week. I sat here and watched this lady. I watched her live, going at it, which, by the way, I just want to point out something. I had to watch it online because our corporate news,
no one
carried it.
Nobody
now, a couple of shows mentioned it, like Rachel Maddow gave a whole little segment of it and showed portions of her live. But this major event, this lady just stood down, the Texas Congress, and she won. She did it. She had crowds turn up, by the way, where they filled the entire Capitol building with cheering crowds all the way through to the end. It was an amazing thing to watch. It was just unbelievable. It was breathtaking. It is democracy in motion. And just like you said, it was like watching Mr. Smith.
Sorry,
it's not.
Now, you can't put your back on.
Here's what Governor Perry
afterwards.
About that afterwards, where he let's play this. This is what Perry said. Okay.
So we'll get to Perry, and then we'll get back to what they did in the investigation.
Oh, yeah, right.
Now.
All right, go ahead.
Go ahead. Which one you want
to? Oh, yeah. We're going to do the what Perry said about Davis.
Governor Perry, yet again.
Even the woman who filibustered the other day was born into difficult
I was a
teenage mother herself. She managed to eventually graduate from Harvard Law School and serve in the Texas Senate. It's just unfortunate that she hasn't learned from her own example.
Now,
she hadn't learned from her own
example. Can you believe this? Why are we not talking about this woman's background? Only because he wanted to have everybody know that she grew up poor with a single mother, not with a silver spoon in his mouth
like
he did, and not having a daggone racist ranch like he did, not having all the things that made him what he is today, nobody like he did, who will never be president of these United States. So you can continuously give all the money you want to this moron's war chest, but you're only giving it to him so he can spend more, because he would never be president.
And the thing is, again, it's this, for whatever reason, that Republicans have this war against women raging. And it's that typical thing. Instead of just even acknowledging, hey, she won that round, you know, we'll come back at you, or anything like that. It's that denigration.
Well,
she's that single mom.
Well,
you know what I mean? It's that constant denigration.
Oh, she's on my trailer park. I mean, not that you shouldn't go for her, but she's from a trailer park. What does she know? Yeah. Well, gee whiz, she knows more than you. She's a graduate of Harvard Law School.
Yeah.
Where did you graduate from? The sheep pit farm? Give me a break here. Hey, here's what Wendy Klein said about this morning.
Governor Perry and Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst led the charge in terms of a breakdown in decorum. They have overridden and made a mockery of all of the rules that we run by in this state.
Mississippi as a move.
So
she didn't throw punches like, you know, he was born with a sheep dip in his mouth, you know, that's why he has half a brain.
Yeah.
She didn't say anything about that.
That's why we're here to say all these things.
That's why we're here. But you know, because he's a complete moron. So, you know, what's his name? The guy from, from the movie, Forrest Gump.
Right.
Stupid is and stupid does.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
But again,
I mean, that's what he is.
This is the part that now you get past the, you know, the Governor Perry is funny to listen to because he's so ignorant.
That's right.
Just stupid things that's easy to laugh at, and you go, "Oh, that guy." The sad part is, you know, he is elected into office, and he does hold the power of the governor.
But he was elected into office by other morons.
I know, but that's the sad part. They elect people like these, but they're fun to laugh at because it's just like Palin or any of these other people. You just have to laugh at them because every time they open their mouth, they say something that's more ridiculous than the day before. So it's fun.
The people who get them to run and whatnot, they know what they're doing because they know that he is a moron and they can control him.
Right. But the part that isn't funny and the part that's
got good hair,
really scary, is what the Republican Party does and the way they operate. So when they're ramming through on the special session, again, called only for this, to ramrod through this bill to restrict women's rights. When someone calls them on it and literally stands up and filibusters it and does a good job and succeeds and wins, rather than go, "Oh, gosh darn, we lost that round. We'll come back again, Bobby." You know, any of that, instead of that, what they did was, when she finished speaking and was getting cheered by the people of Texas that showed up and cheered her on, they turned around and said, "Okay, everybody say aye, aye." And then they said, "Oh, no, we voted it in. It's legitimate." And they turned back the clock. And they pretended that it was before midnight. And they said it's a legitimate vote.
Yeah, but it didn't.
Now, it got all the people were there, the press corps was there, and it's on TV. So then they got caught doing it. Everybody starts complaining. But here's the thing. They still fought it. They sat there for 2 hours fighting with it, saying,
Here's another state senator. Here's a state senator.
Did the president hear me state the motion, or did the president hear me and refuse to recognize?
Senator, you are now recognized on a motion to adjourn.
I do not wish to make that motion at this time, Senator. At what point must a female senator raise her hand or her voice to be recognized over the male colleagues in the room?
Yeah, this is State Senator Latricia Vanderpoot, who stood up and said, "Wait a minute, you're telling me I have my hand up here and you won't recognize it? What do I have to do, climb on the table?" You know, you're recognized only if you say a certain thing.
Right.
You know, well, I ain't saying a certain thing.
Recognized if you quit.
I mean, this is, they're making a shambles of the United States, all these teabag muttonheads, every last one of them.
Well, the thing is that it's not just a shambles of it and making a mockery of it, which they're doing. And you know, they're just so ludicrous, all the shenanigans, you know, and the endlessly, like, no matter how many times you say, "No, we like rights," and they come back the next day and say, "Well, we'll take them again," you know. It's not just that, though. It's the illegality of it. So they literally tried to falsify the record,
right?
Only because the entire nation was watching them did they get stopped. and it took.
And they didn't care if
anybody was
watching them.
No.
They didn't care.
But it took, actually, Governor Perry, to give him some credit, he called in about 2:30 in the morning. He called in and said, it's over. You lost the vote. You have to give it up. So it wasn't until then.
Oh, he's the one that did that?
He did. He called the vote dead and said it's
dead. Well, how can he call the vote dead? He had
no, because it was getting so out of control. They were trying to literally
steal it
and turn back time. And he said, no, you can't keep doing this. You have to let it go. But it was 2 hours there, but they're fighting reality itself.
It could have been Perry. He was sleeping at that time.
But the problem is now, see, they've launched an investigation into him, which I hope.
But he said he's going to bring it back.
No, he's coming right back. Yeah, they're coming right back on another special session to do the same bill again. But besides that, they have started an official investigation now.
Yeah, but who? The IG?
I hope it is.
I don't know. IG.
But at least I hope somebody goes to jail. But here's the problem. Again, these Republicans, they have no respect whatsoever for the rule of law or for government. They'll do anything, including change time itself, to win, right? When they can't get their way. When democracy and law fails, they lie, cheat, and steal. And my fear is, and this is the big problem that I have, because you see them pushing these things through Kansas and Nebraska and all these other states everywhere. There's all these restrictive laws, all these changes being made, you know, just like there's no voting access anymore, you know, and they're closing things down, the abortion clinics and the Sunday voting, everything they can think of. If the only thing that prevented the tragedy in Texas from becoming a true tragedy and not turning into a success that she had talked it down was the fact that the cameras were on them when they tried to steal it. What happens when the cameras aren't on them? How many times have they gotten away with this before? You know, what if it was a major overhaul of something, but it was something minor that people didn't notice, like, you know, corn or, you know, whatever, and there wasn't all the attention of, you know, a lady with all the, you know, feminist trappings of saving woman's rights sitting there with cameras on them while they tried to steal it. And that's what bothers me, because they have no respect for governments or the rule of law. And, you know, proof of that is this guy, even though he said, hey, give it up, you've lost this round, we'll come back again.
Mm-hmm.
Perry is the guy who, you know, when he was running for president and couldn't even remember his 3 points, but his points were the same thing with Rand Paul and Ron Paul and all of those guys. My first act as the president of the United States will be to end the government of the United States. That's their policy. You know, this is the guy who said, I'm going to get rid of all the agencies. We don't need agencies, you know.
Right.
We don't need government. We don't want the IRS. We don't need taxes. We don't need education. We don't need, I mean, what fantasy world do these people live in? Where do they think things like, you know, their favorite bumper sticker of the world, military, where do you think the military comes from?
That's right.
You know, who pays for the cool airplanes at the air show and the nifty-looking tanks down at the armory? Who pays for that? You know, I mean, what fantasy world do they live in when you can race up and down those highways in Texas and look at the neat oil rigs pumping away?
Mm-hmm.
Well, who paid for the roads? You know, I mean, that's what I just, what? I don't.
Those illegal aliens.
Yeah, I don't get them.
Those illegal aliens paid for all that.
Hey, speaking of illegal aliens, that's another thing that passed. The Senate this week passed immigration reform. Is that amazing or what? I never thought that would happen. But
that's the Senate.
Now, hey, something to the House.
Upper House.
Yeah. Well, we're going lower this time. I can't wait to see what these Tea Partiers do with it when it gets there. But we can hope, right?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of
eternal.
Yeah, speaking of hope, this week we had the most up and down Supreme Court week I could almost remember ever. Because in the same breath, they went, hey, blacks, we don't really like you anymore.
Yeah.
But, hey, homosexuals, you're okay. Come on in.
Well, that's only because John Roberts' first cousin of you, or second cousin, is gay.
Yeah.
And you heard what she said when she was.
And he wouldn't be coming home for the holidays.
Yeah. And then they asked the They asked her, says, would he be coming to the wedding? She says, well, we haven't sent out the invitations yet, but he will be invited. She didn't say, yeah, I know he's coming, but she said before that, I know he'll make the right decision.
Well, we've got sometimes the right decisions out of the Supreme Court, and sometimes I just shake my head and say, what? You know.
Well, there's one other thing I want to get on, and that is this guy. There's this guy that makes a hell of a lot of money from us, the taxpayers, as a contractor for the federal government. And he gets the first pick of the contracts when contracts are issued because he is a wounded veteran. But not wounded like we know. This man went to a military prep school, was the quarterback for the military prep school, and got his foot stepped on and couldn't play anymore. But then he played for, I think it's the University of Michigan, and he was their quarterback.
Right.
He never went into the military, which was one of the qualifications for him for going to the military prep school.
Right.
And his reasons was he had a bad foot. So later, he's now a multimillionaire, and he gets picked over every other contractor that's bidding on a contract because he gets a claim as a wounded soldier.
Hmm.
Well, it came across Tammy Duckworth's desk.
Oh, speaking of wounded soldiers.
And this is what went down with Tammy Duckworth and this guy Castillo, which I cheered when I heard it.
In tonight's rewriting the definition of combat injury to include a football injury, which is exactly what one man has done in order to get preferential treatment in government contracting as a disabled veteran. And he managed to do this without ever actually serving in the military. Now, what do you suppose a wounded combat veteran hates more than a liar who poses as a wounded combat veteran? Not much. What you are about to see is what happens when a guy exploiting a phony injury to get veterans benefits faces Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth in a congressional hearing. Tammy Duckworth was one of the first women to fly combat missions in 2004 in the Iraq War. When her helicopter was shot down, she lost both legs and part of her right arm. Appearing before her yesterday was Braulio Castillo, the CEO of an IT company that gets preferential treatment to do business with the government because he claims to be a disabled veteran. The House Committee's investigation discovered that his claim is based not on having actually served in the military, but simply having attended a prep school before college, the West Point Military Academy Preparatory School. Mr. Castillo was the quarterback of the prep school's football team, and he injured his foot playing football at West Point Military Academy Preparatory School. He recovered from the injured foot and then went on to play quarterback for the University of San Diego, and then never served in the military. So how is he a veteran? The House Oversight Committee's report explains it this way. Normally, a cadet is not considered a veteran until he or she graduates from West Point, enters active duty, and subsequently leaves active duty. Time spent at West Point Military Academy Preparatory School and West Point is considered training, not active duty. However, if a person is injured at either school, he or she becomes a veteran due to the service-connected disability. Well, that's just not Tammy Duckworth's idea of a disabled veteran.
Mr. Kitchell, how are you? Thank you for being here today.
I'm not well, but you're welcome.
All right. So your foot hurts? Your left foot?
Yes, ma'am.
It hurts. Yeah, my feet hurt too. In fact, the balls of my feet burn continuously, and I feel like there's a nail being hammered into my right heel right now. So I can understand pain and suffering and how service connection can actually cause long-term, unremitting, unyielding, unstoppable pain. I also understand why, something can take years to manifest themselves from when you hurt them. In fact, I have a dear friend who sprayed Agent Orange out of his Huey in Vietnam, who it took 40 years for the leukemia to actually manifest itself, and he died 6 months later. So I can see how military service, while at the time you seemed very healthy, could 40 years later result in devastating injury. In your letter to a government official, I think it's the SVA, attention, Gina Mu, you said, "My family and I have made considerable sacrifices for our country. My service-connected disability status should serve as a testimony to that end. I can't play with my kids because I can't walk without pain. I take twice daily pain medication so I can work a normal day's worth. These are crosses that I bear due to my service to our great country, and I would do it again to protect this great country. I'm so glad that you would be willing to play football in prep school again to protect this great country. Shame on you, Mr. Castillo. Shame on you. You may not have broken any laws. We're not sure yet. You did misrepresent to the SBA, but you certainly broke the trust of this great nation. I hope that you think twice about the example that you're setting for your children. I hope that you think twice about what you were doing to the nation, to this nation's veterans who are willing to die to protect this nation. Twisting your ankle in prep school is not defending or serving this nation, Mr. Castillo. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, you've been very indulgent. I yield back.
I thank the gentlelady, and the time was well spent.
I mean, this is a guy, Republican guy, because all Republicans, they're all the same way. Bush, Limbaugh, Cheney, they all want nothing for nothing. But, you know, they don't want you to have the same chances as they do. This is just a complete, utter outrage. It's an outrage. And I think that we need to make sure that this man doesn't get another chance at a pie at the apple.
Hey, he's had 50 chances.
He's had 50 chances.
Yeah,
and
wobble off.
We have someone that knows about a little bit about the getting injuries in war and how to treat them coming up right now. How are you there, Dr. Lean?
Hello.
How's everything? Lean,
well,
Galloway.
Yeah, thank you. I am fine, though. I want to tell you, you're talking about, wounded veterans. I want to tell you something that happened yesterday, last night, about 3:30 in the morning.
Right.
The baby, Shockey, started to scratch on my head. I mean, this is 2 foot 4, to scratch vigorously on my head. And then hit at me and kicked me and licked me, trying to wake me up. And when I did wake up, he ran over to Joe and barked and then ran back at me. Joe's blood sugar was 17.17.
Woo!
We ended up calling 911, bringing him in, getting him fixed. He's back full now. But here's what I want to say to you. My little baby, Jackie, is trained for PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and low blood sugars and seizure, alert, right?
Right.
The veteran, the VA, has ruled against providing service dogs for people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. What a shame. This is a shame. Okay, this should never happen. So that is one battle, but by the way, right now, that I'm fighting.
Well, what has this always been like this, or is this just something ruled on?
No, they just ruled on it. I mean, in the past, it's not like some of the people with PTSD applied and wanted the VA to pay for them to have a surgery done.
Right.
The training can be quite expensive. So the VA said no, they weren't going to pay for the service dog for people with PTSD. And that's it.
So is it a matter of the cost why they disapproved it? What was the reason why they disapproved it?
Well, rather the same thing as when they didn't believe that diabetes was caused by Agent Orange.
Right.
Remember in the past, it's Agent Orange does cause all these things.
Right.
Kind of mentality. No. You have PTSD. Yeah, but you don't need a dog. Yeah, take a drug.
Yeah, right. I mean, but how is Joe doing now?
Joe's doing good now. His blood sugar's up. He's at home. I mean, he didn't stay for three hours at the hospital. But it was just a scary thing,
And that not like this guy Castillo or Darth Vader Cheney or Rush Limbaugh, Joe was there under fire like you and me.
Yep.
We know what it is. This guy, I mean, it's an utter disgrace that this man has taken money. And Tammy Duckworth, she put it right to him. We'd be welcome. The people of this country will welcome you to go out and play football again for this country.
Your great service.
Unbelievable.
Yes, exactly. I was so proud of her because she absolutely nailed it.
Absolutely.
You do know that there are only about, I think, a million Vietnam veterans left alive.
We have somebody else. We have somebody else join us on the line here.
Oh.
And
what happened?
Hello.
Yes, I can hear you.
Who's this? Robin
Chester. Oh, our chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, Robin Bradford. You're joining myself and Dr. Lean from the 8th Congressional District, the chair there.
Hello.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Fine, and you?
We were just talking about Tammy Duckworth and what an amazing person and how much it's going to help change the face of the Congress, and she was and how she stood up to this clown Castillo. He should have been perk walked for the daggone hearing. But anyway,
the thing I'm putting up with you guys, and I'm hoping, just like we were talking about our Texas Hero of the Week, but people like Duckworth call BS on these people. They've been getting away with years for pretending to be patriots and for having the bumper sticker for doing, I've got to tell you, but they're not real patriots. They're not real anything. But now we've got people in there that are starting to call them up.
Yeah. So, here's another thing that's happening. There are about a million Vietnam veterans left alive. Okay, so we've been dying off, right? But at the last census, guess how many people claim to be Vietnam veterans? 10 million. Ten million people claim to be Vietnam veterans. But there are only a million, really, there are only a million left. But now it's become popular to claim that you're a Vietnam veteran or that you're a veteran of any kind.
Yeah. Are you telling me there's only a million of us left? Holy
shit. There's only about a million left,
That's how much things have changed, because years ago there was such a stigma attached to it. Nobody wanted to claim them.
Years ago, nobody wanted to claim they were one of the people who were killing babies in Vietnam.
Now it's
okay.
They're heroic.
Well, we want to leave this outrageous subject that Tammy Duckworth had to go to and come to the other outrageous subject, the North Carolina outrageous regressive party that we have in Raleigh. What the hell? I mean, to tell you, they could not wait to jump out and start changing things. They already had they're going to cut out early vote. They're going to cut out the, you need to have a voter ID. They're going to cut out the multiple locations.
Sunday voting.
They're going to cut out Sunday voting.
And forgot if your child goes to college and they register where they go to college, you lose your tax incentive as a parent who pays for everything.
See, I think they can say that, and they can say all these things. Whether or not they be held up in a court is a different story, because that college credit, that's a federal credit. That's not a state credit, is it?
That's federal and state. Because you pay income tax to get credit for that too, state.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that I don't think they'll be able to enforce. Now, whether or not they will be able to enforce registration. No registering and voting at the same time, they'll be able to do that. But what they're going to do is they'll make you vote, register the same week you have to vote. So if you live like 50 miles away, what they're doing in Texas now is they're exactly doing that. They got rid of, in one county, I believe, and I don't know if it was Fort Worth, I don't know which one it was, but they had 86 voting precincts and they cut it down to 12. Some people now are going to have to travel 55 miles to vote. And that means that since there's no registration and voting at the same time, they will have to travel 110 miles, 220 miles round trip in the same week. And you know people do that.
Okay, but, everything that you're saying is true. But we need to be focused on exactly why they're doing it. The power of our one vote. Yeah, but we have to remind people how important their vote is. Typically, in the African American and Hispanic who vote, in their communities, they only vote for national races. We need to make sure that we're getting the message across the board that every race, every opportunity to vote is an important race to vote, because they're going to eventually use those numbers against us. Well, you don't vote anyway, so why do you care? You're not a consistent voter. And as Mecklenburg County Democratic Chair, our focus is making sure that we reignite the Democratic Party across the county to understand how important it is to vote in every election, to be educated on the candidates or incumbents that are running for office. And then after you vote, hold them accountable. We lost that piece in the last 5 to 10 years. We do not hold our elected officials accountable. They only come back to our community when it's time to get reelected or to run for office. And what we've been doing, what we started in Mecklenburg County last month, we had a town hall with all of our Democratic County Commissioners so we can have that open dialogue. And on July 8th, we're going to have the city council come in and have a town hall so we can have open dialogue. But if we don't remind people how important it is to utilize their vote in every election, then we are already defeated because we're not voting.
I understand that, the problem is, that's the same story I heard. So, I first started here in 93. I went to
Party elected. And they were proud of how much everybody wanted, everything else. And I said, I don't know what everybody's going to happen for when only 70% of the people voted. So the problem is,
you're going in and out.
Yeah, got it. Okay, how are you going to address the issue that the elected official is not the important one, but the person who elects the elected official is more important than they are? And the thing is here, because what the elected official is elected anywhere, they do not care about the constituents.
Well, the reason why they don't care, and I'm just speculating, but we don't hold them accountable. And once you're elected, 9 out of 10, as an incumbent, you're going back into that office unless you choose not to run or you do something so egregious that people just don't want to go out and vote. And well, the point is, we got to go back, our party has to go back and get people equipped to understand how important their vote is and that we have to educate them on the candidates, on the issues, and why it's important to vote. You know, at our first meeting in May, we had over 70 people. And I asked the question, what's important to you as a voter, as a Democrat? And they say that they said that they feel disenfranchised because no one's talking to them. No one's asking them questions. So they might as well change their affiliation to independent or unaffiliate, and they don't have to be bothered with the nonsense because no one's talking. We have to have conversations again. We can't continue to say, look, we had an Obama, and everybody needs to come out and vote. I don't see an Obama on the local race. I see people needing to get out to vote and be educated and understand why they're voting. So what we're trying to do is do that, educate people and empower them to vote.
Okay, well, see, here's the thing I want to ask. The reason why the elected officials do not feel that they have to answer to the public or answer to the party is because they think they do not need the party. And the problem is that the party should be choosing the elected officials and not the elected officials. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry who's walking down the street thinks they can be a councilman or a mayor or anybody else because they can't. So you got Tom, Dick, and Harry running for every office, and it needs to be a process that these people can go through the party that chose the party that they can best run. And that means that once that happens, these elected officials will no longer ignore the party or the people. But until that happens, it changes.
I agree with you, and that's true. We should be able to be vetting and encouraging and supporting and even teaching people on the etiquette of running and how to run and what, you know, and bottom line, how much it's truly going to cost you. Because you can have the best candidate in the world, but in some cases they get outspent by the opponent, and that, unfortunately, person gets in, and the party never supported or couldn't afford to support the right candidate. So the whole process has to be looked at in the Democratic Party. We need to be able to have a stable of candidates ready to go. And that's another part that we're trying to work on.
I got a little story to tell you, Michael. This is a good story. Okay. So I said to Joe one day, how in the heck did Texas get Rick Perry? What the heck were you guys thinking? And here's what he said. Well, Texans don't like Rick Perry either, but they don't have any other choice. Because every time there's an election, this guy by the name of Freeman, think about his name now. Pinky Freeman is about as crazy as 10 bedbugs all put together. Okay?
Absolutely.
He is nuts, though. So when you get out there and you think, no, so like you're saying, you know, any Tom, Dick, and Harry can run, right? So when you see Rick Perry versus Pinky Freeman, well, you hell yeah, Rick Perry wins.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, and everybody says I shouldn't say it, but I'm saying it anyway. In New York, that would never happen. You don't just get up out of your bed and say, one more, and I'm going to be the mayor, I'm going to run for the mayor. You got to go down and ask if you did it by the party. And then you got to ask if you did it to the people in the district. I mean, this ain't something that the people around here think it's Mayberry. This is not Mayberry. It used to be. And then Tom, Dick, and Harry to call up on a little rock saying that I'm going to be the mayor. And when people think this is still small town Mayberry, this is what you get. At a party. And a local city needs to in the party. And when they don't, this is what you get. Because when they control the process who runs in the party, everybody is part. I had they don't hear it, so it's coming from her.
She needs to handle her car noise.
Trying to get back here. So it must have failed.
Yeah, but it's the
she's gone.
Actual point.
Yeah.
Is valid. So they've got to do two things. They've got to have a valid process.
Right.
But they also have got to educate voters. Because it doesn't matter all day long if you have candidates there, if people are apathetic and not voting, there's no hope for democracy.
Okay,
because we have one of the lowest turnouts I've ever seen.
I mean, it's outrageous.
It's pathetic. And that's all apathy.
They think 33% is,
you know
fried chicken every pot.
Yeah, it's like we had almost a third of everyone turn out. Wow, whoopee, let's celebrate. No, this is terrible. You know, you can have more people turn out in the depth of freaking Pakistan.
The people turn out with bombs dropping on their heads, mortars coming in, and these people don't go out because the road is slick.
Yeah.
Road is slick.
But here's the thing.
It's too much of a beautiful day.
But here's the thing that people have got to realize. It's as simple as this. A vote.
Hey, Robert, you back?
Is a vote.
Yes, I'm
Robin.
Back. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, well, I heard a lot of noise in the background, so.
It was like,
do you hear it now?
No, don't hear it now.
That's very good.
Okay.
Anyway, so we're just talking
about educating people, making it an absolute priority to get people to turn out, you know, to know why their vote counts and to vote.
And you know, the thing is that you can try as hard as you can. And I have spoken to a lot of these elected officials, and they do not want to risk the chance having the party and the people say if they should run it out. Because half of them wouldn't be chosen.
Well, guess what? The culture is changing. The culture is changing. Uh-huh. And, for example, Raleigh is showing us we need to change because what we're doing is not right. And for us to lose a state beginning in 2010 and following it up in 2012 and getting all these repeals to the General Assembly, you would have to be out of your right mind not to support change. And I'm not trying to point a phrase from Obama, but we need to change our local priority in how we're doing it. And that's what I'm trying to do. With my board and with the Democratic precinct chairs, we're trying to change that culture. For instance, this Saturday, we're having on the South End precinct, we're having a conversation in reference to impending taxes and what that truly means. Because that's a scare word, raising taxes. But for you to pay for services in our communities, you need to have some type of revenue coming in. And unfortunately, it's taxed through tax reform. And a lot of people don't understand that at all. So we're having an education seminar, per se, on Saturday to get people to understand why taxes are being increased in the city and in the county of Mecklenburg.
And what place is that going to be held at?
I can forward it to you. It's going to be, Bishop Park Community Center. And I'll give you the information in a few minutes.
Okay.
I have to pull it up.
All right. Well, one of the things is that, to me, the process has to be that we need to be able to convey to everybody, this is your party. Therefore, you are the one that's going to control who written in your party.
Right, we have to show people that they have a vested interest in the party that they're affiliated with. And the vested interest goes hand in hand. The party has to offer something to bring them back, and they have to be willing to want to be back.
Well, the thing is that the party, it can only offer what they have unless the people are willing to be part of the project that changes how elected officials are chosen. And elected officials need to be chosen by people, not by themselves. They don't get up out of bed one day and say, I'm going to be the next mayor, or I'm going to be the next city council person, or I'm going to be the next county commissioner. That is no choice to me. And when people go along with that, you feed the hungry lion. That's all you're doing. And all we've been doing in this county and across this state is feed the hungry lion. But we didn't choose the lion at all. And we might have chose a docile bear or a docile deer. But the hungry lion that's 10 years old is going to eat us. And that's what these elected officials, most of them, do to their constituents. They don't care about the constituents. Once they get elected, it's all over. Because they're in a safe district. So what are some of the things that you as the chair, the new chair of Mecklenburg County, going to try to bring about besides getting the people more involved?
Well, we have a whole strategic plan on getting all of those things done. We have to get people to reinvest in the party. We have to grow the party. We have 195 precincts in Mecklenburg County, and we need to have every last precinct involved and organized. We need to be holding, like I said earlier, we need to be holding elected officials accountable to the party. We need to make sure that we're, educating. And we're not just here for a GOTV program. We're here 365 days of the year. And we need to let people know that. We need to reengage. And that's what we're trying to do. Like I said when I gave you the numbers early,
our monthly meetings have grown to where we're having it in a larger facility. And that's a good thing because people are starting to realize how important their vote and their views and concerns are. And what we're trying to do in our town halls is to get that across to the public officials. You know, it was a lot of resistance for the county commissioners to come in. Oh, I don't want to be picked on. If someone has something to say, they can come to the county commissioners meeting. Well, that's a monologue.
You know,
we want dialogue, and the only way to do that was to organize a town hall. And that's what we're doing. July 8th at Little Rock, AME Zion Church on 7th and McDowell at 6:30. Come out and talk to your city council people. Hopefully they will show. We already have a commitment from 3 out of the 6 so far. So if we have 3 and the other 3 do not show up, that you should take into full consideration also. This is your party asking you to come in to talk, and you won't come in. Well, maybe you don't represent the party. You know, people, we need to hold their feet to the fire. And I got the information for Saturday. It's going to be at Bishop Ridge Clubhouse, and at 6001 Chalice, Chalyce Lane, and that's in Charlotte. And that's Saturday, June 29th, from 2 p.m. to 3:30. It's Bishop's Ridge Clubhouse, 6001 Chalyce Lane, and that's in Charlotte on the south end.
Okay. And what time is it going to be? What time again?
It starts at 2 o'clock and concludes at 3:30. And we're going to have Alexandra Serrata of the Tarza Mitchell and Tarza Mitchell from the North Carolina Justice Center, as well as Senator Dan Clawfelder and Senator Joel Ford. So this is an opportunity to talk to these people in reference to what is going on in the General Assembly and what does that mean to Mecklenburg County in reference to taxes.
Somebody
in the Democratic Party, we're working towards the initiative that I ran on, and we're going to try to execute within a 2-year time as much as possible. And like you mentioned, yes, we need to be able to have a stable of Democrats ready to go and be out there, even if they're running against incumbents who aren't coming to the table.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that I see that is one problem, and it's the only way to correct it is just with more money. You know, these elected officials, they don't get paid jack. And that's, you know, that's the mentality here. Well, if you keep it small where you'll only get people who want the help, well, that's not necessarily true because half these people probably wouldn't have a job if they didn't run. So, you know, for a run for office. But the thing is that you don't get the same commitment with someone.
Well, you know what I've learned? Go ahead.
You go ahead, please. I'll come after you.
As a person who's ran other people's campaign as well as being a candidate myself, listening to the candidates on the campaign trail and the things that they say, and then once they're elected, you know, unfortunately, it's all about personal gain in some cases, not all, but in some cases. And, you know, some people will make choices just to align themselves with people who can guarantee them to get reelected. And that's the sad part. We need to be able to have people who are running who will not, unfortunately, get caught up in that nonsense. But once some people, and I underline the word some people get that notoriety as a public official, it totally takes away from the platform that they ran for. I mean, you had people who said that they would not support voter ID on any level, no compromise. And you look at their questionnaires that are still posted to this day, because everything, once you put it in writing, it's out there. And then they would go out and turn around
and try to co-sign a bill that they claim will be less, more palatable than what the Republicans are trying to throw out. Why would you do such a thing when they have the supermajority? You co-signing anything or the willingness to co-sign anything is almost it's egregious, and it's offensive when you said that you would not do that. And this is what we have. We have people who get elected, try to soften the blow, align themselves with people in a bipartisan situation when you don't need to be bipartisan due to the fact that they have the supermajority. And they're going to do what they want because they have the vote. What you should do is go back into your community and start some type of grassroots thing to make sure that the powers that be see that, look, we weren't going to vote for you anyway, but we're going to let the people who voted for you, who live in our neighborhood, who are voting against their interests, let them know that they're voting against their interests. That's what we need. You know, that's what that person should have done when instead of co-signing on a bill that didn't need them to co-sign at all.
And you're not talking about anybody that's coming to the meeting on Saturday. I know you're not. But anyway, when you were off the air, and that's the inside joke for people who are listening, I know. Hey, but anyway, you were off the air, and I was talking about how it worked. One of the things that we have a problem here is we have a city council and a county commission. That's old fashioned. You do the thing. And what we need now is to have one city council combine the city council and the county commissioners, 15, and have a city council who answers to the mayor. But you see, when you got all these guys, very, very easy to tell the people, because most people don't know who that with. They don't know what person is that.
I live in the county, Michael. And I know up here where I live at, all the town mayors and all the people who live in the county, and the reason why some of them live in a county is because they don't want that type of consolidation. Because at the end of the day, they feel they don't want that type of consolidation because at the end of the day, they feel that that'll go against all of their interests on the reason why they live in a county. That's going to be a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people who live in a county. But I agree with what you're saying. We need to look at consolidating government in some type of way. So, we can better hold people accountable, and it's a central area for people to go to. But I know these people in the county where I live at, that is not anything that they're considering. They don't want it, and the mayors like their notoriety and celebrity in the
town. That's right. You can't grow like that, where everybody has their own Indian chief. You can't grow like that. One person who's running the show, and that's the way it is. No place has five or six people running the same organization in the same block. You can't have five precincts on one block. You can have precincts in one area that are same. But these people are still operating like it's the daggone, what I said before. This is the clown show. This is the 24th largest city in the country, or 22nd largest city. We can't operate like this anymore. I mean, you guys should have got off the bat. This is complete nonsense. And we're in a position like this, getting back to the elected officials. That's how these elected officials hide. They hide under the cloak of that new TV series, Under the Dome. It ain't my fault. You got to talk to that guy. Oh, the education? You got to talk to the Board of Education. Oh, you mean the water? Oh, no, that's city council. Oh, no, me? I ain't involved in none of that.
Right.
Oh, no, who's on first? Nobody knows, and they don't want to tell the folks that elected. That's why we need to get these elected.
No, I agree with you. You're right on point.
We need to get elected officials to answer for why they were elected. And as long as they can hide behind some other elected official, we will never get them to do anything that we wanted them to get elected for. And when we can't force them to come to a meeting, or we can't force them to come and face their constituents, well, they need to get their butts out and go someplace else. But people, it seems that they're afraid to talk to an elected official. That man works for you. And that man needs to answer. Period.
That gets back to voter education. Down here, it's all topsy-turvy. Nobody knows what's going on, but that's the way they want to keep it, too. And that's why I think, now, y'all are both right in different ways. You want a streamlined process just to make it simpler. You know, you go to one spot, you know, one-stop shopping. You know where to go. She's talking about, and the catch here is that Charlotte has just grown to take over the size of its county.
Right.
But in a typical situation, you have little bitty towns and a county. Also, they're two separate entities. But all of this gets better if we have simple accountability, if you know what every politician is doing, what they stand for.
You can't do that in Mayberry.
Yeah, but that's how they get away with things, is the lack of accountability.
Right now, we have another poll online. Who's this? Who's this?
Hello, Michael. This is Lucas Rodriguez. How are you?
You know, is this Lewis?
Yeah, can
Lewis?
You hear me?
Okay, I can hear you now. You were breaking up for a minute. This is Luis Rodriguez, who was one of the people that thought Occupy Charlotte. He's an author, an activist, and now he's working for Action North Carolina. How are you, Luis?
Yeah. Hey, thank you for having me.
No problem. You seem to be breaking up a little bit, Luis.
I am. Luis? I'm getting some very perception, and I'm in my office right now, so forgive me.
Okay, that's Rob.
Let's see if I can move around a little bit.
The NSA blocking. It's all the
yeah, that's just the NSA picking
recording.
Up recording. That's what it is. what is Action North Carolina going to try to do to motivate these people in North Carolina so the restrictive, regressive party that's now running the show with their head Donald Beck McCrory before everybody here isn't even allowed to go pick up the newspaper off their front lawn.
I hope you can hear me now. Action NC has been very involved with the Moral Monday movement. I'm afraid I wasn't able to catch the first part of this program, but if you haven't talked much about the Moral Movement.
No.
It is huge. I think that last Monday, the 4th, no, excuse me, the 24th, we had well over 3,000 people on the Halifax Mall right there in front of the state capitol, and 20 people got arrested while trying to do just what you were talking about, going and talking to their representatives. To date, over 600 North Carolinians chosen to engage in civil disobedience, have chosen to stay in the Eagle Rotunda and speak to their legislators, and it's a powerful movement. Now, each one of those people who comes out to support that, those thousands of people who come out week after week to support this, and this has been going on now for 8 weeks, and it'll be going on at least another 2 weeks, we believe, while the legislature is in session. Those are people who are members of various communities, various civic groups, various church organizations, various fraternal organizations, and they all go back to these different parts of the state, to these different cities, and they spread the word. This is all, in a situation like ours where we have a Republican-controlled Congress and a like-minded governor, we haven't had in this state since 1870. I think that it is very not to get discouraged. A lot of what I would consider personally just craziness is coming down from this legislative body, but so many people are willing to go out, willing to go out on a Monday, willing to rally and march and even protest and get arrested for this has spoken to not only North Carolinians but across the country. People are waking up and seeing that We have to stop ALEC. We have to stop the American Legislative Executive Council here in North Carolina, because this is battleground number one for their agenda right now.
Mm-hmm. And now, has anything been changed because of this vote now that the Supreme Court handed down on Section 2 and 4 and 5? Because they went literally crazy up there and are going to run amok with all these with the voter ID bill. They said that would go in instantaneously. They're going to cut the all Sunday voting out. They're going to cut out early votes. So what is on the agenda for you guys to tackle first? What do you think is more important?
As far as the Voter Rights Act, the Supreme Court's decision to do severe damage to the act by cutting provisions from Section 4 has basically opened the door and made this really more of a state's fight again. And we're seeing that, like in the early 1960s, this has come down to the states. And the shenanigans have already started. I believe six southern states have already ramped up their voter ID and other suppressive techniques for keeping blacks from voting, Latinos from voting, those with prior felonies from voting. Yeah, Michael?
Yeah, you're still breaking up. Okay.
Still breaking up? Let me see if I can step outside for a second.
That's better.
Please bear with me. You know, it'll go in and out, but our office is notorious for but okay, hopefully you can just a little bit better. Is this a little bit better?
Yeah, it just sounds better.
Yeah? Okay. So what I was saying about the Voter Rights Act, you know, this is all the strategy across the board is aimed for all these things. And that is to raise awareness amongst votership. Amongst those who can vote, and say, hey, look, you know, by first, 70,000 North Carolinians are going to be cut from unemployment benefits.
How many?
You know, 70,000.
70,000? Who is it now?
70,000. 70,000 unemployed Carolinians are going to be cut from the federal unemployment insurance benefits.
Now, how is that? The state has control of that.
Excuse me?
The state has no control of federal unemployment.
Well, I'm not sure. I can't answer that. I do know that 70,000 people are being cut from it. I think that the federal government provides the funds, but the state has to actually accept.
And that's the problem. The state voted not to accept the federal funding extended by the government. And they're going to cut these people. It's already been signed, and it's going to happen. It goes into effect July 1st.
So the state, Governor McCrory has chosen to cut those benefits, chosen to cut deny the federal funding for Medicaid. That will affect 500,000. That money could have covered 500,000 more North Carolinians, 25,000 of whom are children, 41,000 of whom are women, 23,000 of whom are veterans. Across the board, there are things that are coming down the pipe from Capitol Hill at the state level, and it's clear. And really the number one message that we have to send to voters is, you know, the president is great and it's great to vote for the president, but you've got to come out for these state and local elections. That's where the rubber meets the road in many cases.
Well, this is a question I have both you and Robin. You know, they may feel they're looking at the problem on a state level by getting all these non-whites off the unemployment when three-quarters of them are white that are on unemployment? How do you think this is going to affect the whites that are now going to not be able to receive unemployment? Robin?
That's the point that I was trying to make earlier. You have Republicans who are poor and indigent who are voting against their own best interests. And what we need to do is have the minority General Assembly members galvanize their constituent base as a whole to show them, look, yes, you're a registered Republican, but you're voting against your own interests. You are falling prey to all these repealed bills because you can't afford, you know, you're in that same bracket as these Democrats are. So it goes back to education. It goes back to telling and showing people, look, what this General Assembly is doing is only benefiting the top 10%. If you look at the cabinet of the General Assembly, those are all high rollers, high dollar people who has contributed to Macquarie's race, and they have key cabinet positions. Look at Arch Holt. He is the controller of the state of North Carolina. And we know what his agenda is. We know what Alec is, and we know what the Koch brothers are. So we have to make sure that we're educating across the board to let people know this is what's happening to you. You could be a registered Republican, but these Republicans are not representing your interests. Hence the fact you vote them in and you vote against your own interests. It's not super government on the federal level. It's your local government who's taken a constitutional state stand to do all these repeals. And people need to understand that.
Well, one thing that I'd like to remind everybody, and I wish you would, you know, take the chance to educate voters every step of the way. North Carolina supposedly has a quote-unquote enlightened constitution.
It was.
No, seriously. Article 1, Section 2 says, I quote, all political power is solely invested in and derived from the people and is instituted solely for the good of the whole. This type of...
Rest my case.
Yeah. This is exactly the what...
Hallelujah. Well,
they need to bring that back. But
I want everybody to listen to this. This is one of my favorite quotes. Just listen to this. I want you to, on the other side, tell me something about it, Robin and Luis.
Now, many of our citizens have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want anybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And that's the point. People need to understand. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Robert. Go ahead.
People need to understand that North Carolina is the petri dish to change the electoral vote across the United States. If they can manipulate North Carolina with the redistricting they have to draw their own lines and to create this false sense of security on guaranteeing who's going to be elected, North Carolina is being looked at. If North Carolina repeals everything that was so great about North Carolina and change the electorate, that's what's going to happen. We're going to always have the popular vote, but the popular vote is not going to elect officials who represent the total populace. Only the ultra-conservatives that North Carolina has elected in the General Assembly 2010 and now 2012. And they're trying to solidify that for 2014. And they're trying to make Mecklenburg County be a carbon copy of what's going on at the state level. And Mecklenburg County has to understand that we're not going to do that. So we have to show people what you just, you know, had on air is the plan. And the plan has been executed, and it's working for them. And we need to stop that. We need to make sure people know what their rights are, what the state constitution represents, and why we cannot continue to go backwards with all this repeal.
Thank you, Robin. Right now we have I believe it's the chair of the state of North Carolina for the Democratic Party, Mr. Randy Bowler. Are you there, Randy? Mr. Chairman.
Yes, I'm here, Mike. How are you doing?
We're doing quite well. And
can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you quite well. I know that, matter of fact, I was supposed to send you that clip, and I didn't do it yet. I'm sorry. I will send you that clip today.
Of the goo-goo clip.
Of the goo-goo.
Yes, please
do. You were on the air. But what I have joining us is Robin Bradford, chair of Mecklenburg County, and we have Luis Rodriguez, who is the involved with Action North Carolina. And what I was asking them is what, one of the main things is, how do we get the people to get more involved? And my main thrust, and I guess Robin, she can speak for herself, is, was in agreement with me that it, the elected officials, are not, they don't own the party. We own the party. And we are the people need to make them do what we ask, not have every Tom, Dick, and Harry, like in Mayberry, run for sheriff and mayor and city council person. And in order to do that, the party has to be strong enough to demand to these people that want to run, look, you come to us, the Democratic Party, and we will put you in front of the people to see if the people want you. Not you're going to run and you want us to give you the people. I mean, that's not, this is like having the cart before the horse. Well, what's your take on that, Mr. Chairman?
Well, the process is different, obviously, for nonpartisan races and partisan races. So it's a lot easier to enforce that when you have partisan races. In nonpartisan races, everybody, as you said, every Tom, Dick, and Harry can file in. It's a democratic process. It becomes a little bit trickier because the Democratic Party cannot be playing favorites in primaries with candidates. But what we can do is facilitate forums and other types of ways that people can meet up so that the people can see the candidates and hear from them. And what you're really talking about is making sure that the folks are getting a good group of candidates that whomever they elect that, that they essentially represent the Democratic brand. If they're voting for a Democrat.
Well, you are absolutely correct. How though do we get to the point when we can have the people or give the people the understanding that this is their power?
You're asking how do you get the people to understand that they need to be exercising their power at the ballot box, that, you know, that they need to be engaged in their democracy? That's your question?
That was his question, yes. We've been, you know, doing this for quite a while, but how do we get voter apathy taken care of in the state? How do we get people engaged again? How do we get people to realize their power is in their hands and they give it away when they don't show up?
That is in the American democracy kind of the million-dollar question. You know, the problem that you have when you look at studies, and I think I might have said this on the show before, but when you get up to a certain income level, a socioeconomic level of about $80,000 to $85,000 of household income, you get about 75% turnout, and maybe 80 is going to be your max. I've actually worked in some areas in Chatham where we got the turnout to 90% and even in the mid-90s. You know, you can't get 100% because the voter rolls, of course, have people on there that are no longer with us and things like that. They're not purged quickly enough. But as you go down, if you go down that chart and you get to people with zero household income, it's remarkable that your turnout is about zero. And so you've got this complicated issue where a vast majority of the population lives at 80% of median income or below, but they're not voting in the kind of numbers they need to do to ensure that economic policies and policies that are being exercised by their elected officials are uniformly benefiting every, you know, every citizen. And so how you get to those people, I think it takes an effort, essentially, for a local party, a county party, to be involved in elections every cycle. And that's tricky because people get excited, obviously, with the presidential election and then less excited in the off years, and only people that are truly dedicated pay attention in the, with the municipal races, especially outside of bigger cities.
Right.
And the way that you can do it is you've got to have a strong program to explain to people, you know, what your local elected officials do. So when I was running for mayor, I would go on the basketball courts. I played basketball. You know, I didn't have a 40-inch vertical, but I grew up in Indiana, so of course it's in the blood. And I went out on the court with the guys and talked to them and said, look, if you want basketball courts built, you want softball fields built, you want skate parks and the rest of these things, you need to stop electing, you know, letting all the voting be done by, you know, older people that are 70, 80 years old. You need to get involved so that there's a balanced electorate at the ballot box, because the needs for one community are not the needs for another. And I said, if you like to have these assets in the community, then you need to vote. And I got a lot of them to vote in my elections by explaining what it meant, because otherwise they weren't going to go vote.
We have another caller on the line here. Who's the new caller? Hello?
Oh, sorry. Michael, that was me. I switched from my cell phone to my office phone. So.
To Randy's point, that's what I was saying. It's Ron Bradford. That's what I was saying earlier. It goes back to that education piece. If you don't show people how important their vote is and why it's important, then they're not going to utilize it until a national race, because on the national ticket, that's what they do. This is why it's important for you to vote. And that's why so many people think that local races are minute, when local races decide their day-to-day living. And a lot of people don't understand that. But here in Mecklenburg County, that's one of our initiatives, to show people how important these local races are and how it's not trickle down, but in essence trickle up.
Okay,
we need to do that.
Right, Michael, if I could chime in.
Go ahead.
I know that I was having this discussion with Pat McCoy, our executive director here, and basically,
McCoy?
You know, Pat McCoy, not McCrory. but basically the conclusion that we came to was a lot of the work, you know, fortunately, the silver lining to having such a extreme right-wing legislature and governor is that it becomes very easy to point to the culprit. You know, when people see their earned income tax credits going away, when people see their unemployment insurance going away, when they see Medicaid not being extended, when they see cuts to public education, when they see voucher programs, when they see payday lending, these are all things that we can clearly say these people did. This person put in place. This guy did this. So it's really, you know, and really it's two things. One is the education, and that's saying, you know, why do you, you know, this is why things are the way they are. The other is the motivation, which I think voters are going to really have. You know, the extreme case that we're in, I think, is demonstrated by Moral Monday. You know, people are fired up. People are paying attention. And even those people who lie in those demographics that don't normally have high voter turnout, they're being affected directly by these policies. So it's really just a matter of getting into those communities and doing the grassroots work of knocking on doors and saying, hey, you know, the situation that you're in, this is exactly why. This is what you need to do about it.
Now, see, you took the words out of my mouth, Luis, and there's a short thing that I like to say to you, because most people don't understand it until the spoon is taken out of their mouth. All right, let me play this for you.
We didn't hear for you, Judd.
You got 10 seconds.
This doesn't have to go wrong, son.
Well, that's on you. 5 seconds.
Hey, still in your bed.
Any of you so much as flinch, we're going to put you down. You're going to die right in front of your kin. Is that what you want?
Don't matter to me. Y'all all right with it?
Yep.
Never thought I'd live this long.
What's going on out here? These perverts chasing me.
They don't look like perverts. Well, maybe that one.
Says a federal.
We're U.S. Marshals, ma'am.
Marshals? That's fancy. You best go on ahead and state your business.
Just looking for Waldo Truth.
My husband? He ain't here. If you want to leave a means to get in touch when he stumbles home, I'll holler.
But just so you understand, till we meet Waldo, we're going to put a stop to those disability checks.
Hell, you are?
Oh,
y'all ain't
going to
take our drop. Lower those goddamn guns. You want to start shooting with my grandbabies right here?
So one of my favorite shows, Justified, where they were looking for this guy Waldo through, and, you know, they were out in the sticks, back alleys in Kentucky, in the Kentucky Hills, and he said, so they were going to fight it out. But as soon as the chief of the marshal says, well, we don't need to fight out, we're just going to stop your disability check. Right away, they gave up everybody that they knew from the day they were born. And this is the problem that's going to happen. It is just what you said, Luis. And I believe, Robert, you were saying the same thing, and the chairman was saying that, see, people do not feel it. Luis, you said there's going to be 700,000 people taken off the
All right, now, Michael, I said 70,000.
Okay, I go 700, I was getting ready to say. But 70,000 people.
No, 70,000.
70,000 people, right. They don't know until it happens to them. So what you're saying, when they have gone so extreme to the other side, the people who don't care now will start to care.
Oh, well, that right there shows you there are 70,000 people who are a little bit more willing, maybe not entirely willing, but there are 70,000 people more willing to look at the real problems and look at where the real blame lies. You know, they can't. Not all 70,000 of them are just lazy moochers, as our governor seems to think they are.
But here's the problem with this whole argument. The thing that bothers me greatly about it is voter education and voter participation are always key. And, you know, we get a big bump when we have a presidential election or whatever. Like when Obama went in, for instance, we had everybody riled up, everybody's excited, everybody's cheering and crying, hugging each other and saying, we did it, we did it. And then 2 years later, we couldn't get half of the people that didn't show back up.
Half,
you know, we couldn't get them to come out to even, you know, we'll throw a party for you if you show up. Nothing, you know, there's no interest. But then these are the same people who will start complaining. Well, I thought things were going to get better. Seems like nothing's changed. I'm so disappointed. I'm just, you know, because you didn't show up, we just lost the Congress, and then now we can't get anything done. You know, it's got a direct correlation. But my problem with this kind of thing, disaster democracy that we got going on here, is that we're hoping, well, maybe things have gotten so bad that now people will start participating again. You know, I realize that once the Taliban has the people in the stadium and starts beheading them and stuff, but, you know, everybody realizes the Taliban are bad guys. I'd rather not get there. You know, I want to head it off beforehand because people forget the Taliban, they were elected. They got into office. Okay. The fascists under Hitler, they were elected. They got into office.
Oh, yeah.
These things happen because people were just like, well, it won't really matter. I don't need to show up, and everything's pretty good, and, you know, blah, blah. We need to do it beforehand, not after it's so bad that you go, hey, what's that stench from the ovens outside of the
right.
Room?
Yeah, well, the thing is,
I don't like this, like, oh, my God, they're destroying everything. They put us back into the 18th century. Now I'll pay attention. Well, you know, it's a little
well,
late
but
now.
The thing is, though, it's just like the old saying with the people that, you know, the old storyline, well, it came from my neighbor, but it wasn't me. Then it came from the neighbor on the other side, it wasn't me. Then they came from me.
Right. Well, I thought, but see, this is maybe just because, you know, I'm a historian and I like to teach and I think of these things all the time, but it very much bothers me that the reactive nature of things. We've already been through all these things, so haven't we learned the lesson yet? You know, we learn the lessons, we repeat them. And we don't need to go back to a time when we don't have any right to vote, when blacks and the poor and women have no rights and are repressed and all. You know, we don't need to turn
property owners.
We don't have to refight these battles. We already done it. Let's go forward. Let's try something, you know, even beyond that.
We have someone else who just joined us on the phone. Who's this? Hello? I can't hear you. Hello?
Is it me, Michael? Michael, is it me? It's Matt Newton.
Yes, Matt. How are you? Matt Newton.
Hey, man.
I'm great. Hi. It's great to be here.
You're on with Luis Rodriguez, and of course you know, and Robin Bradford, and Randy Bowler, chair of our party.
I'm flattered to be a part of it.
Have you met Randy Bowler, the chair of the Democratic Party in North Carolina?
I haven't personally, but I've heard wonderful things.
Okay, well, you two need to get together. I think, Randy, this is someone that I can help you a lot down here in Charlotte. And Mecklenburg.
That would be great. I'd like to respond to something that my fellow friend in history said. One of the issues when the way I look at campaigns is that people typically get motivated by anger and fear, but in order to feed that, it's like feeding a fire. And we need to change that so that people are actually being elected on the basis, you know, of affinity, on the basis of love, on the basis of something positive. And the problem, when you're referring to this reactive politics, is that that is all on the basis of fear. It's on the basis of higher needs, and suddenly I'm going to lose everything, so now I'm going to pay attention. It's one of the reasons that I feel that our candidates, that you were asking earlier about candidates, I would like to see candidates run on what we believe and run on something offensive instead of worrying about what the Republicans are going to do and run on being defensive. I would rather lose and teach people so the next time around I've planted a seed for our beliefs than to actually run in a defensive fashion and end up in the situation that you described.
So, Randy, you're talking about Robin Bradford's campaign, the North Carolina seat, 92?
Yes.
You know, now, I want you all to listen to this, something that went on a rally this past week.
In addition, there's also what's happening in North Carolina right now. What's happening in North Carolina right now is a little unusual. Unheard of, maybe, is the right term here.
City Bill 132, a bill to entitle an act to include instruction in the school health education program on the preventable causes of preterm birth, including induced abortion as a cause of preterm birth and subsequent pregnancies.
A bill to be, what did you say the bill was, the name was?
This bill to ban abortion is... It was unheard of, the length of it. I mean, what are we going to do something about that? I'm asking you, Randy, what can we do about these people, these regressive, I don't know what, Neanderthals up there? What can be done about the legislation that they're putting through? How can we get across to the people that this is going on in their own backyard?
Well, I think that from a fundamental basis, people need to be messaging around three topics and make their messages derivative of these. Water, women, work. Okay, that's a women topic. The Republicans have introduced something like 900-plus bills in the last couple of years nationwide that are deleterious to women. And you have to just keep getting out in the communities and remind all women this is what's at stake. Unfortunately, this is, you know, a reactive and being inanimate. And also call your legislatures and put and shine a light on them. I mean, and put the pressure on McCrory to veto it and say, you know, Pat, you were elected by a lot of unaffiliated and even Democratic women that heard the message that you were a moderate, and yet you haven't shown a lot of moderate stripes up there, but put it squarely on McCrory to veto it.
Well, you know, that this bill that they were talking about up there is going to make teachers talk about preventive causes in the classroom and how that they need to make sure that they have to get the right preventive measures, and that includes ultrasound. I mean, this is just completely.
What's he going to do?
It's outrageous.
To talk about.
They're going to talk about this in school.
Of abortion.
Right.
And why abortions are so bad, and what you need to do to prevent them. But again, it's just a way to introduce and to ram down the throats of everyone. As you said, women's rights, women's health issues that they keep forcing in state after state as soon as they take over.
So, it's just, and now we come to the, coming down to you, Matt. I mean, we have the situation here where out of how many police incidents have actually gone to trial? Matt?
Well, shifting gears slightly, I believe we're talking about appeals from internal affairs investigations within the Charlotte-Mecklenburg greater policing area. And there have been well over 3,000 in internal affairs investigations over the past 16 years. 78 of those have been appealed to our Citizens Review Board. All but four were actually denied even a hearing. And then at that point, those four that received a hearing, and this is over a 16-year period, but those four that received a hearing, not a single one of those hearings resulted in a decision that was favorable to the citizen, or as the Charlotte Observer would put it, sided with the citizen. Not
now,
one. 16 years, zero.
How many of those were non-white?
It's hard to know because the police department as well as the city guards that information they keep it close to the chest. They claim that that state law prevents the disclosure of that. I believe from what the law school undertook an extensive 3-year research project on to investigate this matter, and the majority of those are within the minority community.
Well, you see, now
the
this one, how much money is taken out of our state budget to produce additional jails? I mean, that seems to be a higher priority than whether or not your child has a food in their kindergarten class. I mean, this is where we're at with this. This has gone so far over the end in every single element since this aggressive group of Neanderthals has come into power.
Well, we talked about this before, Mike. The Republican economic model is profit-driven. It's all about privatizing everything and jails making an immense amount of money. But it's the same reason why they would rather close public schools and open charter schools and private schools and things like that, because it privatizes all of those monies so that a company can make money rather than the people. You know, you open something just good for the people, just like a public school. Now, what's the benefit in that? I mean, there's no money to be made in that. No,
absolutely.
Children aren't the issue. You know, it's like, but there's a lot of money to be made in incarcerating one. Or,
well, you know, Randy, maybe you could tell us this. How much money is this progressive party in the state taking out of the school system and being put someplace else, like prisons? Do we know yet? Has a budget been handed down yet?
You're asking how much money their policies have redirected away from schools to prisons, for instance?
Correct.
I don't have a number on the top of my head, but I can tell you that the other caller or the other guest is correct. You know, the military industrial complex is one, and then there's the prison industrial complex is another. And so you have these choices being made about, do we invest in early childhood development? Do we invest in other programs that are going to make our communities more robust and ensure that children have a chance and you don't end up with these type of outcomes? Or do I invest in this, you know, the prison, whether it's public or private, which is you know, if it's private, it's a for-profit enterprise. A long time ago, I put forward a paper, and this is kind of, you know, and I said I could see a world someday where judges come in, and because when you send someone to prison, a private prison, it's like an annuity. If you have a 20-year sentence, they can figure out exactly how much you're worth, discount the cash flow to current value, and people would bid on you to be in prison. It sounded like science fiction when I wrote that in the 1990s, but the reality is we could end up at a day where people bid on people because it's an income stream, and that is a sick society.
Well, they do it in Texas. Texas, Arizona. I mean, where the governor's son owns the prison system,
yeah.
The public prison system. So they do it in Arizona. I mean, hey, that's a good working model. Why don't we use it? Well we have a hold on. We have a, hello, who's this caller? New caller? Hello?
Matt, I was going to say maybe. Oh.
I can't hear the other person. Can you call us back, caller? Okay. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. I was going to say maybe stringing some of this together from the standpoint of the issue I'm trying to tackle in Charlotte, and I'm sure that Robin can speak to this as well, and the prison industrial complex. But you know what we're talking about is the disproportionate impact upon lower socioeconomic classes, and certainly upon minorities. The lack of alternatives when there's been outright abuse is staggering, and I feel like it's something that lends itself to what I believe was Mr. Bowler was talking about the annuity like state of our prison systems, and the fact that it's that much harder to really pull yourself out of a lower socioeconomic class and fulfill your true potential. It's a matter of a lack of opportunity, isn't it? And what we see when it comes to the proposals being forwarded by the Republicans in Raleigh is we're seeing an agenda of creating even further gaps within our currently expanding income disparity. And I think that is extremely problematic. And from a macro level, maybe I'm attacking this on a micro level, but from the macro stage, certainly that's something that I believe is affecting us all. And we need to get mad about that and ensure that we elect good Democrats to be in Raleigh who will push an agenda that fights back.
We have another call there. Hold on just a minute. Hello, Carl? Who's this? Hello, Carl? Okay, we'll put the call on hold.
Looking here on a budget chart,
right,
showing state budgets 2015 to 2015,
right,
the state Senate budget proposal,
right,
came out. Just now, this doesn't have all the numbers. I'm just giving you they're saying that this is the net change for this new budget. 6.6% drop in public education funding, but a 4% increase in justice and police budget.
Well,
so that right there about
this. There's your answer, Randy. Dropping the education 6% and raising the prisons and everything else 4%.
Right, and that's the point. I think that Matt spoke to it so well. If you are taking money out of education, and if you look at Mecklenburg CMS school system, they went from closing schools, making overcrowded schools in neighborhoods that were not getting the proper education in the first place. Then they were putting in teachers who were not trained teachers. And you're losing that child at such an early age hand over fist. What other way of survival do they have? They don't have that track to education, so how are they going to learn to feed their family? Unfortunately, through the criminal system. And it's very sad. And, you know, with Macquarie coming from Mecklenburg County, seeing what this model has done to Mecklenburg County, why, you know, how is it so important for him to be a proponent of cutting education and creating a two-track type of education where your diploma will dictate whether you'll be successful or not? It's so ridiculous, and so many people have slept on that. Now we have in the school system, either you're on a vocational track that you're not even taught a true vocation, or you are college bound and you get that college degree, you know, that college diploma, but everybody else gets a certificate of completion. What is that about? That's just saying, look, you got your first golden ticket to the corrupt jail system, because that's where you're going. Education is key. Education is the only way to get out of the muck and mire that you're currently in. And they're taking away, they have taken away that on a state level.
Mike, that's one of the reasons we were, all of us in Mecklenburg County were screaming about McCrory.
Yeah, well, you know,
people don't listen. We already knew.
So, I mean, one of his first acts was to now give a 5% raise to Duke Power. So, you know, that's his middle name, Duke.
Yeah.
But see, the thing is, we should have expected that he would just be a puppet up there to direct at the direction of Art Pope. But and you see where that is now. So how do we get? What is the message? I'll go around the horn here. Start with our chairman of the state party. How do we go and get people motivated that they are now getting less, and they're going to get less and less the length of time that this regressive party is in office?
This is just year one.
And this is just year one. I mean, we got four more years to go. It's going to be a real beauty. I mean, if they could do this in year one, what do you think they could do by year three and a half?
Yep.
I mean, so Mr. Chairman, how are we going to now, and we got a major election, and this should be posed. 2014 should be posted as a major election. Not an off-year election. This is a major election. And I believe it should be treated like that.
All right, Michael. My answer for to you is this. First of all, the party and the people that support the party and the candidates need to demand that there's clarity between what we stand for and our policies and values and what our opponents stand for. That has been blurred too much over the years, so that a lot of voters either have apathy and say they're all the same, which we know is false, or they feel like they have no effect. So, for instance, we have to be arguing for economic policies of prosperity that are demand-driven and put money in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this, you know, the ARRA stimulus package, which was 40% tax credits, by the way, so it had a component of, quote, trickle up or trickle down, however you want to term that, but it didn't go far enough. But it did soften things up. If you look at the numbers, it really should have been, you know, probably twice as big to address infrastructure concerns and real jobs and the real multiplier effect in the community, like Mecklenburg, like Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we have to be strong. I mean, this is what, unfortunately, the South, for instance, when it was competing for industrial jobs and luring businesses down here 40, 50 years ago, it was built on a three-legged stool for the people, which was basically low wages, low expectations, low educational values. And if we're going to actually bring prosperity to the people, the wages have to go up, education has to go up, and then expectations will go up. And the thing that's holding it back is this. People that hold bonds long-term don't want inflation because bond yields are affected by inflation. And when bonds are strong, you can see interest rates are low. And they have been at a historic low for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that people don't like that have bonds is any inflationary pressure, which is why they keep the wages down. But when wages are kept down, there's no money to spend in the community, and the economy is flat. We have to push to pay people livable wages so that they can actually raise families and be functional members of the community. As far as the educational piece, part of that is charter schools. Charter schools were only put into effect to provide a laboratory experiment so that people could learn about what techniques could be used in public schools. It was not meant to actually substitute for public schools or drain the public schools. This new legislature is blown up the cap, and essentially they've done a backdoor methodology to create private schools on the public dime. And the only thing we can do to get people's attention, and a couple of the callers brought this out, is we've got to pin the tail on the elephant.
That's a good quote. I like that. Putting the tail on the elephant. You're absolutely right. And those charter schools, as you said, were supposed to be the experiment, but they have now blown it up, as you said, to make it another species of education, which is solely going to be segregated. And this is the major problem here. And everything you said, I think, is brilliant. You need to run for governor. But anyway, the thing is that you're absolutely correct when you say that the people need to realize this. But does it take the pain of someone getting their arm twisted and thrown out in the street to get this across to them? Randy?
What does it take?
Yeah. Do they need to be thrown out in the street?
I'm going to give it. Yeah. What it takes is that all of us, every day, when we see people that are family and friends and acquaintances that blow out those comments, we have to respectfully and with strength confront them. We can no longer tolerate people getting away with those kind of wink and a nod comments because we're being polite, because they're listening to Rush Limbaugh too many times. We have to start deprogramming our family and friends in real time. And when I mean deprogramming, they've been propagandized to for decades. This is not an easy task.
I love that deprogramming. That's absolutely true.
And so, Robin, here in Mecklenburg County, there's a whole lot of deprogramming that needs to be done. So, I mean, there's more than it could take 10 years in Mecklenburg County. How are you will be a grandmother by the time that this is done. But how do you start to go about to do that, Robin?
Well, I'm going to keep steadfast to what I stated earlier. What we're doing currently is trying to open dialogue with our Democratic public officials in our town hall and educating our Democratic voters and encouraging our unaffiliates and independent voters to look at what's going on in the state and how they're voting against their own interests. If we don't start holding candidates, officials, accountable, then we continue to lose. If we don't educate our voters to understand that every election is an important election, we lose.
Mm-hmm.
And the proof is in the pudding. So I encourage everyone to come out on July 8th to our city council town hall, and let's talk. Let's stop the monologuing and start dialoguing, and true dialogue, you know, and hold people accountable. Your voice and your vote are very important. And I want to work with progressive people who want to move that forward. And no stone is going to be left unturned. We're open, we're talking, and we're going to grow this party and have Mecklenburg continue to be the supermajority on the school board level, on the city council level, and on the county commission. But not just be the supermajority, but to be able to have dialogue and hold them accountable. We are watching, we are listening, but most important, we vote. And that's what I'm working towards. And any other initiative that the state chair, Randy Vola, would like to send down to us, we are willing to work towards a democratic initiative across the board. So come out July 8th, 6 o'clock, to Little Rock Amy Zion Church, to the Mecklenburg Democratic Town Hall, and let's have some dialogue.
I like that. Luis, how in Action North Carolina, what are you guys planning on trying to get people to their senses and realize they're doing things in their own worst self-interest?
All right, well, thank you for the question. Action NC is more than willing to partner with almost anybody that can help extend our reach. Like I said, we're grassroots organizers, so we deal a lot with folks right in their homes. We go door-to-door if we need to, although that's not the preferred method. If I had my druthers, I'd have a million-dollar advertising campaign going and billboards everywhere and TV spots and YouTube commercials and previews in theaters and stuff. But until we get all that, I mean, it's basically doing exactly what the Robin and the other speakers have said. It's about getting out, educating people, telling them specifically what the legislation is that is harming them, where it came from, and giving them remedies as to how their vote, specifically how their vote can help change this come next November.
Matt, how? Here in Mecklenburg County, this is such an atrocious situation with no accountability in the police department that satisfies the ordinary citizen of Mecklenburg, and you can see that the increase in the budget that Thomas just read is for more jails and more policemen. So there seems to be no effort trying to get people. I mean, if you're building jails, you got to put people there. This is an industry. So how, in what you're doing and working with trying to get a review board, how is that, do you think, will affect what is going on overall in the state? Because I'm sure if it's this bad here in Mecklenburg, I don't even want to think about what it is in Union County.
Yeah, other cities across the state, including Durham, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, they have their own review boards. I think in Charlotte, we have a city council that has a budget, an operating budget of roughly $1.7 billion, $200 million plus of that goes to the police department. I feel like there should be an allotment of that goes towards oversight and transparency, and right now it's zero. And that's no different across the state with any of the other cities. And so maybe what we should do is we should think about making even a fraction of that be a priority. And what I'm proposing, I don't think is outside the realm of possibility. And it's certainly not cumbersome or unduly burdensome. I mean, we are talking somewhere in the ballpark of maybe, taking of that $200 million, taking out, just a handful of a thousand, maybe 10. That's plenty to I think make huge strides towards the type of lasting change that we're talking about. Now, we're working in a coalition effort, and I think statewide, we have here in Charlotte, at this point, the NAACP, Democracy North Carolina, Louise Knows Action Agency, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, the A. Philip Randolph Institute, among others, have been working together to bring this issue to the attention of the public and our city council, and to do it in a way that is taken seriously. I think that across the state, we have rural area voters who don't understand, and to get to Robin's point, who don't understand how the policies that are being passed by the supermajority in Raleigh, if not will, but already are affecting them. And hopefully, I hate the idea of thinking that we get so close to the precipice that we go over, but it's a matter of working together statewide, countywide, and maybe even state organizational wide in a coalition effort to get out there and educate folks and let them know that it is extremely important for them and their children and their futures as well as their livelihoods today that we see to it that the right issues and agendas are put forward, that we don't become the old North Carolina, doesn't become old Mississippi, and hopefully, we can do that. I am trying to do that on a grassroots level, and maybe that fever spread.
Okay, I'd like to have the chairman, Mr. Randy Vola, give us a thought for the chairman's report for the for the week, if you could. What do you have for us, Mr. Jamie?
Well, I'm actually right now driving to Davidson County to give a speech out there in Lexington. But I'd say our report is the Democratic Party and our allies are showing up every Monday as, with Moral Mondays and helping shine a light on essentially how immoral and how wrong this legislature has been. Every week it seems like they're having they're passing legislation that's either bad for us economically or bad for us with social policies or both. Pretty much it was a big week, and we all know this, on what happened at the Supreme Court. It was a strange week with different rulings, and one half people are happy and the other half they're uprooting historic legislation and striking down Section 4. But I personally think that these are all opportunities for us to get people's attention and motivate them. My basic feeling is this. And this is the only this is why I'm doing this job. North Carolina is a purple state. It can be a blue state. If we can make this state, county by county, reliably blue, and resonate the values that we believe in, we will change America and thus change the world. And if this state becomes reliably blue, then there is no way for extreme Republicans to ever get elected to federal office, presidency again, because the Electoral College electoral map won't work for them. They're going to have to change or they're going to become extinct. The bottom line is, you essentially could lose all the battleground states and win Colorado or North Carolina and win.
That's right.
So I'm doing this because I know why Art Pope and the Koch brothers are in here. They know that if this state can be changed, then they can hold on to the Southern strategy that Richard Nixon, started putting in place in 1968. If we, on the other hand, can push it the other direction, then we're going to break this stranglehold and once and for all change the consciousness of our fellow Americans and, in my mind, change the world. So we're in a real battle here. But this is not just a battle for today and tomorrow. This is a battle for the future.
All right. Robert, do you have any last thoughts? Robin, are you still there? Hello, Robert.
It could just be you and I. I don't know.
I'm still here. My last thought is, I just want to thank you for having this type of dialogue. I hope everyone who is listening will go out and discuss what's going on and why it's important to get out and vote, why it's important to hold public officials accountable and use your voice to the fullest effect. We can't continue to go back, because if we continue to go back, we will have a civil war here on the grounds and the shores of the United States. So people really dig deep and understand that you are just throwing your voice away when you don't utilize your right to vote.
Can you give us that location again for this Saturday and the time?
Oh, this Saturday? Okay, wait. Okay, the time is from 2:30 to 2 o'clock to 3:30. It's going to be at the Bishop Ridge Clubhouse at 6001 Chalice Lane, Chalyce in Charlotte. And we're going to be talking about the impending taxes. And also on July 8th, Monday, at 6 p.m. at Little Rock Amy Zion Church, come out to the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party's Town Hall with the Democratic seated officials on City Council. We want to hear from you. Let's have a conversation. Thank you.
Okay. Luis, do you have a last thought? Luis?
My last thought is what we say every week at Moral Monday, forward together, not one step back. That'll be my last thought.
There you go.
Very good. And Matthew, what's your last thought?
My last thought is, and I don't know what much more I could add aside from the fact that please learn more about the Citizens Review Board in Charlotte. We have a website. It's CRB reform.com. We have our seven-point proposal plan. We have a chart that shows the process from a complaint being filed with our Internal Affairs Division within the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, and then how that is appealed through the Citizens Review Board process. And we also have redline policy, redline ordinance changes, so real qualitative policy proposals and solutions. Anything you could think of, any resource is on that website. We also have a Facebook page. CRB Reform Now is the Facebook page. But once again, crbreform.com. Please check us out, and please contact your local representative.
Okay, I want to thank all my guests today, Chairman of the Democratic Party, Randy Vola, Chairman of the Democratic Party of North Carolina, and I want to thank our Mecklenburg County Chair, Robin Bradford, and North Carolina Action Coalition, the Action for North Carolina. Is that right, Luis?
Action NC, just Action NC.
NC. And I want to thank Matthew, our resident lawyer here in Mecklenburg County, Matt Newton, for giving us the latest on the CRV reforms. And I also want to thank our 8th District Chairperson, Grace Lean Galloway. And Grace, I hope Joe's doing much better. And give the baby a kiss for me. I want to thank everybody. And you guys have a good weekend. I am going to be off in Charleston next week, for the next 2 weeks. So I will see you. I won't be here.
A brief vacation.
Brief vacation. After all my ups and downs in and out of the hospital, I need it.
Okay, safe travels to you, and thank you.
Yes. Hey, Michael?
Yes, sir.
I think I have a tagline that you can use.
My father
was a big history buff. And Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor, used to, in German it's called Nachweiter, but in Latin it's Plus Ultra. It means still further, and that's our motto. There's still a lot further to go.
I like that. I like that.
Still further. Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chip. And you have a good trip. Good trip out to, where'd you say you were going?
I'm going to Lexington tonight. I'm on the road right now.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I appreciate it.
Plus Ultra.
Have a good trip and safe trip back home.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye,
Matt. Bye. And Robin. Okay.
Right. I like that.
That was very good. Well, and I was off a little bit here trying to get a hold of our resident,
Reverend Hales.
Yes, Reverend Hales.
General Counsel.
He was involved because they are up to their eyeballs in the stuff that's going on here in North Carolina. And he just met with the NAACP chair, NAACP president of North Carolina, Reverend Barber, yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Oh, there's a lot of stuff I want to tell you, but it's up to my eyeballs now." So he said he was sorry he couldn't come on the show. He said, "But I'd like to come on next week." I said, "Next week I won't be here."
Yeah.
So we're going to have him come back and give us all the dirt that's going on.
Yeah. Well, one thing, just for a point.
Yes.
Didn't know I found it too late. We'd already talked about it earlier, but I was looking up this thing. It said that we have the dubious distinction this week.
Dubious.
Of the new budget they just pushed through
up
in Raleigh. North Carolina is the first state ever to be kicked off of this.
Kicked off rolls.
Yeah, the... We have now dropped from the federal jobless funds that they provide what it is long-term employment after states' short-term employment runs out. The federal government kicks in and provides more benefits for people who can't find work on the long term. Well, our state, being the lovely state that it is, with our go F yourself people up there in Raleigh, they just said, "We don't want that. We refuse all the money. We're out of the system because these people are on their own." So they've dropped us. First state ever. We're
the first state ever?
First state
you mean
ever.
Georgia never did it.
No,
Mississippi never did it.
No,
Texas never did it.
Right.
Louisiana never did it.
Right.
Holy.
And this is the one that cracks me up the most. Julie Howard, Republican from Davie County. This is her statement on it.
when asked about this. She says, if we stay in the program, it's just a burden to businesses because delaying that, it just delays the inevitable. These people are out of work, and they it says the potential for debt goes up. You know, the more you have to pay.
Who is that?
This is the Julie Howard girl. And the one that cracked me up the most, though, is it says that we are doing this to help people. She says that it will encourage them to get out and get work because they're just lazing around, you know. So it will just push them faster.
Unbelievable.
That's their benefit. You see, it's just a great deal. Helps people out. It makes them get off their lazy butt.
Yeah, they can pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, even though they don't have boots.
She said these cuts will help people find work faster. It's just it's a win-win. You see, just help them out. And she said, you know, it may not be the job that they want, or the career that they want, or the salary they want for the rest of their life, but just take a job, any job, get back in the game. That's the Republican.
You know what really kills me?
You know what's wrong with you being out of work? That you're not working. Get back to work, Mike.
You know, that kills me. You know, when you're on welfare or you're getting food stamps, they say, oh, you're a deadbeat because you don't pay taxes. Every time you go to the store and buy something, you're paying taxes.
Yep.
I mean, what don't these people understand? They keep pushing that lie out there that people who receive food stamps don't contribute to the society because they don't pay taxes. They pay city tax. They pay water tax. They pay tax at every store. They pay gasoline tax if they have a car. What don't they mean they don't pay taxes? They pay city and state tax. They may not pay federal government taxes, but they certainly pay city and state taxes.
Well, no, they pay, it's always like that, though. And then, just like this budget here, the thing about this budget is that they're raising sales tax on everybody while cutting corporate taxes.
We mentioned before, but people late join in about the taxes on the cars. Tell repeat that.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, that's a totally separate thing. But this is just, really stick it to all those environmentalists, I guess. But
no, but it's not to do that. Is it? Well, maybe.
But because you know how the Republicans are, they can't stand this. But I think really it's because we have Duke Nukem up there in the governor's seat. Since the tide is changing toward more energy efficiency, and the tide is shifting away from fossil fuels and the old technology of it, well, they want to counteract that as much as possible. So instead of having, hey, let's go toward more solar, more efficient cars, more everything, clean up the environment, and get off this oil dependency, what they're doing is they have a punishing tax now. Any hybrid automobile, that is one that uses gas and batteries, gets a $50 tax fine for being a hybrid, and any full electric car that's 100% electric, $100 fine. And they said this will help offset the fact that these cars aren't contributing to the larger economy by getting polluting fuels. See, but they said this way it'll help them pay for new roads and stuff because those
roads, what new roads? What new roads?
That's the logic, man. That's what
Now they're going to say we need new roads.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like Rush Limbaugh said, and I was going to get the quote, but I was just too big. I didn't get to bed at 5 o'clock this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And Rush Limbaugh, he was doing a commentary on the same thing you're talking about. He said, people thinking building all these windmills. He said, windmills make more noise than the average car. He said, so now they're polluting the air with noise.
Yeah.
He says, pretty soon you'll have windmills all up and down your the streets that you live on.
Yeah. Well, that's like the one I heard.
Why are they going to put windmills down the street I live on?
Another Republican I heard was saying that all the change in it wasn't global warming and things like that. Oh, why we're having superstorms and tornadoes and hurricanes now because of windmills blowing it. You know, what do you expect with all that wind blowing around?
And it's hot wind, too.
Stupid.
Can't,
like my father said, can't argue with stupid.
Stupid says.
See, that's the problem with America. We build too many windmills, Mike.
Yeah. He said, they make all that noise. He said, I mean, they're polluting the air. He said, yeah. So, see, how's that possible if he can't hear anyway?
Well, they're speeding it up or something.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Oh, good. And he said, and they're so big, when they put them on your block, they're going to put windmills on our block. I mean, give me a...
You know what? If we have enough windmills, maybe we'll spin the earth backwards and go back in time like Superman.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, whatever. These people are freaking...
Well, I'm going to try to see Superman.
Oh, yes.
But
yeah.
I don't know. My back is going to be... But we're going to have... Oh, I gave you this list before the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have some pretty good guests. We're going to do a comic... Another... I had a lot of requests. Comic book... segment on the heroes that are in the movies.
Yes.
Superman and Iron Man. And now, I was having a talk with one of these guys today, yesterday, and we couldn't figure out whether was Superman the original superhero, superhero?
I believe.
He was, right?
Well, there was.
Shazam. Was
okay,
before
yeah,
him?
Well, no, Superman, I believe, was the original comic strip.
Superhero, right?
But there were uses of the term superhero and stuff before that, but in written form. Like one of the earliest that I know of.
Tarzan.
Well, Tarzan is Superman, but one of the earliest ones to use the word superhero was Doc Savage, actually called a superhero.
Right.
And there's even ads, I'm saying superhero, Doc Savage. And another one that used superpowers that were extremely like Superman.
The Man with the X-ray Eyes.
Ray Milland. A book by Philip Wiley called Gladiator. And it was about a super strong being, you know, from another planet, has superpowers, and he can jump amazingly and do all these things, and he's invulnerable, and he's super strong.
Jump higher than the Empire
State. And he was like, you know, a super, they called him a super gladiator. He was super strong, super powerful.
And he would have a little tight.
But, yeah. You know, that the terms and the powers kind of predate a little bit, but I think Superman actually has the distinction of being the first. I'm not absolutely sure, but the first strip character, he and Batman came out fairly close. So
very
Batman
close.
Was modeled largely off of
the 1939.
Around there, 38, 39, somewhere around there.
And well, don't we also have to include, what's the other guy, Captain America?
Yeah, all of those guys that came out, you got to realize they came out right around.
Because I remember he was always fighting the Germans.
Yeah, they came out. They were war propaganda kind of people. That's why we, you know, Captain America. I mean, that basically is, you know, period
now,
Captain America.
Well, we were also talking, we got another minute here. We were also talking about difference between the DC comics and Marvel comics.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, and I think it's DC, correct me if I'm wrong, were humans that had some sort of supernatural, or not supernatural, superpowers that they created. And the only person that was part of that, that wasn't part of that, was Superman. Am I correct? Because all the DC, all the DC characters.
In general.
In general, right?
Very general characters.
Well, DC.
DC Universe. You have to understand that those first characters, by the way, preceded all of the modern comic book characters and stuff.
You're right. Well, I'm only talking about the original. I don't know about these other, you know, Peppa Pig and all. I'm talking about the original.
These characters, you know, these are modern companies that kind of have bought the rights of and continued on.
Right. Well, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the original now.
But the original ones, you had now DC.
DC.
DC was Detective Comics.
Right.
And they came out of detectives. So that's one of the first.
So Batman was one of them.
Batman, Superman. Okay. But they tend to be more magical in general. Like, you know, Wonder Woman has literally magical powers from the gods and gods of
okay, but she's a human.
Right.
See, so DC was more human, right?
Well, no. In a way, though, DC was more magical because they did have people like Martian Manhunter from Mars. They would have characters from outer space, like Superman, technically, is an alien.
Yeah, but there's only a couple of them.
Right.
Martian Manhunter, Superman. The rest of them are
Marvel,
all
now you got to realize Marvel came along, you know, later. Years later. It's in
right.
the 60s. But their characters are all supposedly based on science, and almost all are human.
Oh, okay.
They're
so
the
ones they're the ones that are human.
Okay. And all that. You know, the X-Men are mutants and all, but that's, you know.
But they're all human that have scientific know-how and they change
right.
them.
And that's like the whole thing, like, you know, the Hulk. He's a guy caught in an atomic blast. He becomes a creature and all, but he's a human.
Okay, well, then, how did they work the film, The Avengers? How did the Hulk become part of The Avengers?